It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. What a great panel we have. We're all back from Vegas for the Consumer Electronics Show, and we're going to give you our rundown of the biggest stories. We'll also talk about a very sad story, the passing of Aaron Swartz, and a lawsuit against podcasters. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 388, recorded January 13th, 2013. Can't stop the bomber. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For a special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter TWiT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone. Find out what your gadget's worth and get cash to upgrade to the latest thing at Gazelle.com. And by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with colleagues and clients anywhere. You could share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, use the promo code TWIT. And by Carbonite Online Backup. Automatic, continual, unlimited backup for your computer files, just $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com and use the offer code TWIT to get 2 bonus months with purchase. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, and what a week this was. Leo Laporte joining me, a panel of people who are back from Vegas, starting with Father Robert Ballesser, host of This Week in Enterprise Tech. He was at Vegas.
Indeed, and I don't believe I brought back a flu. This will be a first in 17 years.
I know. Did you wash your... What was your secret?
My secret was I shook hands as little as possible. Yeah. It was mostly fist bumps.
Yeah.
And I had 2 pocketfuls of hand sanitizer.
Yeah, smart. And the happy fork.
And well, you can't do anything without the happy fork.
I want to talk about the happy fork in a second. Before we do, let's introduce Mr. Will Harris of Channel Flip, also in Vegas.
Yes, I think my brain is still there. Actually.
Were you there for meetings or because you love it? Or
well, lots of meetings.
Yeah.
So one of my interesting themes of CES is the increasing mediaization of consumer electronics.
Oh, God. I think CES now is really pretty much a press show.
And lots and lots of media companies,
bloggers, new media,
trying to get in on the sort of latest technology.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think you know, lots of late nights, lots of meetings, and
is this on behalf of Channel Flip?
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. So all sorts of interesting Google meetings and things going on.
Cool.
And this is my first time in the TWiT studio.
It's really nice to have you in person. We have you via Skype,
but
it's good to have you.
It's gorgeous here.
Nice to see you. Also, Roger Chang of Techzilla.
Yes.
Great to see you again.
Thank you for having me.
My good buddy, and East Meets West. You still do that, right?
Yes. Now on a very infrequent basis.
Yeah. Well, Tom's moved to L.A.
Yes.
Sad.
Come out with a new schedule.
Yeah. So before we talk about some of the things you guys saw, we should talk about all the, you know, cool gadgets you saw. What do you think of this CBS CNET thing?
Oh, that's, I think...
So I want to emphasize that we are not beholden to anybody, and so what we say about this trade show will not be in any way influenced. CNET, which has a long and somewhat glorious tradition of tech news coverage, gives the best of CES awards each year. They've done so for some time since Tech TV stopped doing it. I think.
No, I think G4 took over, and then
Tech TV / G4. Yeah. They nominated the Dish DVR Hopper is a finalist in their Best of CES Awards. Hopper is a very cool product. Lets you record multiple channels. I think all the major networks at the same time.
Prime time.
And then skip the commercials, which has brought them under the scrutiny and eventually lawsuits from most of the major networks, including CNET's parent company, CBS. CBS apparently objected to CNET putting the Hopper on their Best of Awards because of the lawsuit, and the Hopper was disqualified shortly before the winners were announced. CNET attached a disclaimer to its list of award finalists. Good for CNET for saying it, because they could have just gone zzz. Instead, they said the Dish Hopper with Sling was removed from consideration due to active litigation involving our parent company, CBS Corp. We will, and this is the sad thing, we will no longer be reviewing products manufactured by companies with which we are in litigation with respect to such product.
Ugh, it's horrible.
This is the nightmare, or one of the nightmare scenarios for journalists, right? I mean, to have the advertising arm reach in, have the legal arm reach in and tell you what you can and cannot cover, or even worse, tell you what you can or cannot award. I have friends in the industry who were bemoaning this the minute they heard it. They said the only reasonable thing to do is for the CNET editors to quit. Now, I don't think they can do that. I mean,
well, they could do that. They're not going to do it because they have to feed their kids.
Exactly. But I mean, that's the kind of angst that this has drawn out. I've had friends who say, I will not have anyone tell me what score I'm going to give a product. I will not have anyone tell me which one I'm going to recommend. This is even worse. This is a company who's not even ashamed to say, yeah, we are not going to cover you if you sue us or if we're involved
in
litigation
with you.
Right. That's just, ooh.
But I think it's going to become an increasing problem because one of the trends that we're seeing over the last few years
is
the mediaization of technology. The fact that, you know, big technology companies are getting into media, big media companies getting into technology, and these kind of legal spats are, you know, in many ways so common that they're always going to start to throw up editorial issues. I mean, you see, you know, any of the big newspaper companies that are always, you know, suing each other, and it just becomes a nightmare for the journalists.
I think, you know,
you're owned by Discovery now.
Yes.
This could happen to you.
Potentially, I mean, right now, at least Texilla's content does not dovetail or any of Discovery's current offerings. But I think it's misleading to assume that this is somehow new. I think this has been the case for decades on. I mean,
never happened to us at Tech TV.
Well, we had a very strong editorial kind of firewall that was...
For that reason.
And I think at some point... when news became more of a product than actual information, when CNN came online and, hey, look, we now have a product we can sell, suddenly became an asset. And anytime you involve large amounts of money, people start, you know, yeah, it starts with, you always get a slippery slope. You start somewhere, well, maybe we won't cover it. We'll just kind of ignore it. And suddenly it starts rolling into censorship, into selective bias. I mean, that's the whole concept behind gatekeeping, right? You know, you let people know what's important based on what you consider to be good or not.
I think it hurts us as tech journalists, though, doesn't it? Because now the perception is, oh, you know.
Well, I also wonder if it really hurts CES as sort of an entity.
Well,
because
it hurts. You know who it hurts is CBS.
Well, because CNET
this used to be the Tiffany Network. Yeah. Now they clearly have no dedication to journalism.
Because CNET is like the official press partner,
well,
right?
Goodbye.
Of CES.
I would hope CES would pull the plug on this.
Well, yeah,
now.
Because if you're
CES,
the press partner censoring what they're going
to first thing I do is I go to the Consumer Electronics Association that organizes CES and say, under no circumstances can these awards be handled by a corrupt organization like CNET ever again,
or just a company with a vested interest,
a conflict
of interest. Because you will run into that issue time and again.
You know, somebody asked me, I gave a keynote on Monday at the Podcast Awards New Media Expo, and somebody asked me, should I syndicate my content? Should I partner up with big media? And I said, under no circumstances. And this was before this came out. But I said, even then, every time we've talked about doing this with other big media entities, there's been an impedance mismatch, and when it comes down to the final deal, it always doesn't fit, and I always pull back because I don't want to be put in a situation like that.
You know, what strikes me is that I come from sort of the home podcaster background. I don't have training in journalism, and so I always look to the big organizations to sort of take my lead from. This is how I should be acting.
Yeah, that's not true
anymore. Exactly. If I'm a home podcaster, I can say, well, if CNET's going to do this, why can't I just shill for a company that's going to hand me a bucket full of money?
Right. Well, I always said, if I'm going to sell out, I'm going to sell out for a lot.
That's the
trick. Because
I'll have no career after that. If I ever did that, it would have to be so much money.
You'd have to work again.
They call FU money. I'd have to be able to walk away and say, I don't care if I have any credibility. But the minute you do that, your credibility, your integrity are gone, and it's almost impossible to recover.
And I just feel really sorry for the guys at CNET who are, you know, not the senior editors or not
You're stuck between a rock and a hard place. I mean, you can't. You either stop earning a paycheck or you. You know, you totally
and who's
lose
in a position
principles.
To do that these days?
I have a home for each and every one of them.
And the tech specialty class, it's so incestuous. If you put yourself on a blacklist by doing something like that, who else
and
is going to
take
you?
It's such a competitive market that they can easily say, well, we can replace you. We'll find that 20-something that is eager to sell out.
And the thing is, this has been going on kind of bit by bit with, you know, TechCrunch investing in companies that it covers. This has been happening more and more. And the attitude's always been, disclose it and it's okay. And this is what the end result is. And I've been warning against this. People say, no, as long as we disclose it, everybody knows who's in whose pocket. It's okay. No, it's not. Because what happens is things like this where you actually get legitimate contenders for a prize removed for consideration because the parent corporation says you better not.
I mean, like, car journalism used to be rife with that.
We don't
want to
get – and whenever you're a trade press, you got to watch out about that. Right.
Hey, let's talk about our new car. We're going to fly out to an island in the middle of the Aegean, and you get to drive a really super amazing sports car. We'll put you up. We'll feed you food. You know, we'll fly you both ways, 4-star accommodation, just to say something nice. And then you get like a bunch of fluff, you know, generally 5 to 6 pages long.
Actually, I saw a great article on Gizmodo this week, which was one of the writers who said, you know, we all know that PR is basically just a shill to try and get, you know, give you free stuff to get something out of you. He said, I got so fed up with this while I was at CES this week. I was so tired and so achy and so ill. I just tweeted, I will write anything about anybody's product
just give
if
me
someone
money.
Will give me a back rub.
A back rub. You're
a back
cheap.
Rub. And so the guy tweeted it, and within 5 minutes, he got a headphone company that sent a masseuse to where he was on the show floor, gave him a back rub, and he said, here is, and I'm writing about these, whatever it was, headphones. They sound really good, really interesting.
And they're
very relaxing. He said, this is CES distilled to its purest form. And I thought, yeah, that about sums
you know,
it up.
I'll be honest, there's some companies that don't get it. I mean, you know, I'm not going to name any particular names, but we did a review for a product on Taxilla, and the CEO kept calling me back, asking me to review it again. It's like, well, no. I mean, there was nothing wrong with the initial
review. We have reviewed it.
It's like, you know,
we're done.
You want me to review it because, you know, so it becomes more favorable, and it's just like, no, that's not the idea
behind
it.
That does happen from time to time. We've always gotten that in Tech TV. We got it. And you just ignore it. And most companies are savvy enough to know, you get a bad review, you get a bad review, you move on. Some companies get punitive about it. Life goes on, right? I don't know.
Will, that is a great idea. I already have 3 offers for a back rub.
You haven't even asked me yet.
All right. Anyway, I thought we should bring that up up front. We will talk about CES. And I don't know, this is such a sad story. I hate to dwell on it, but we're going to talk about Aaron Swartz because a huge story. And if we don't talk about it, you know, it's the kind of thing that mainstream media is not going to be able to understand or make any sense of it. But we can, and we should talk about it. We will. His death and his what his legacy was and what he meant to the world of technology in just a little bit. You know, somebody in the chat room said, hey, well, how is it different from taking ad money? We do. We take ad money. We're very clear when it's an ad, right? And we know I would love not to take ad money. But I don't know of any other way to fund the business. And we certainly don't change our editorial coverage of advertisers because of that.
I think we could go even further. I mean, just from my experience with Twit, whenever I get a new ad read, one of the things that's always told to me is,
you don't have to do it.
I don't have to do it. That was the very first thing that you told me. If you're not comfortable doing an ad, you don't have to do it.
Right.
The second thing is, I was told, we don't disparage the competitors. My job is not to go in there and say, I hate that company.
Yeah,
we don't do that. I think that's what makes it different. There are rules for saying, this is an ad, this is who supports us, and if you like us, please support them. This with CBS was just completely different. This is, we want to punish this company because we're at odds with them legally.
Right. We don't like what they do, so we're going to punish them.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to do an ad anyway, so there. Because if I don't,
great segue.
I don't know how we keep the lights on. You know, our power bill is like $4,000 a month.
Wow!
So I'm gonna.
You know, looking at this, that doesn't surprise me.
Look at all these lights. Would somebody, for crying out loud, would somebody turn off a light? And what's with the fire? Turn up.
Close the door.
I'm not made of money.
But it's worthwhile, Leo. It makes you look beautiful.
It does.
Even for a little while.
So they just turned off the lights. And I feel like I'm saving money, but maybe the wrong way.
I think they turned off the wrong lights.
Thanks, Chad. I didn't even know we could turn off the lights. So that was a revelation right there. That was good. Our show today brought to you by the great folks at Stamps.com. This is a postage pro tip. I love the word pro tip. But Chad, you were, I think, the first person ever gave me a pro tip. I was playing Skyrim. You said pro tip.
Do you want a pro tip, Leo?
Yeah, here's a pro tip.
Here's a pro tip.
I like that phrase, pro tip. It's like, this is stuff pros know. And the pros know if you're doing mailing, you don't go to the post office to buy stamps. I guess that should be fairly obvious. You wait. It's a waste of time. You wait in line, park, and all that stuff when there's a better way. Now, maybe the pros think the right way to do it is a postage meter, but that's not the modern way to do it. You do not need a postage meter. It's so funny because I see people waiting in line at the post office with their postage meters to get them recharged. You don't need that. You don't need special ink. You've got a computer, right? You've got a printer, right? That's all you need. Oh, and Stamps.com lets you buy and print U.S. postage from your computer, your printer. You don't need anything else. No special ink. No postage meter. You can print right on the envelope, which means you can put your company logo, the postage. In fact, Stamps.com will pull the address and the information from your address book, from QuickBooks, if you're an eBay or Amazon, Etsy, PayPal. You know, if you sell stuff online, it'll put it right from the website. So you're not typing in addresses. You're just printing right in the envelope or printing right on the sticker for the package. It will automatically send out emails with tracking numbers for priority mail and express mail automatically. It's just the fastest, easiest way to turn yourself into a professional shipper. So if you do a lot of mailing, you really want to use Stamps.com. You also get discounts you can't get at the post office, up to 21%. On express mail, up to 15% on priority mail. It gives you international mail, too, fills out the forms for you. Certified mail fills out the forms for you. There really is no easier way, no more accurate way to mail. And when you get that scale, now you always have exactly the right postage. You just plop the letter or package on the scale, boom, it prints out the right postage. Now, here's the scale. Here's the deal. If you go to stamps.com, look at this special offer, $80 value. Wait a minute, $25. That's nice. That seems like you get $25 free postage. You get the scale. That seems nice, but I got a better deal for you. Click the microphone and enter the offer code TWIT on the resulting page. And the $80 bonus value turns into a $110 value. It's more free postage you can use over several months. You get the digital scale. You get a $5 supply kit, and you get a four-week trial. Stamps.com. Make sure you use the offer code TWIT. That way we get credit and you get the extra postage is a way of saying thank you. It's how we do our mailing here, and it really is the best way. Stamps. Jessica Corbin. I bought her Fitness RX. Have you tried that yet? Jessica used to work with us. She makes a thing that measures your vitality and stuff. It's an iPhone app. I got it. Stamps.com. She's smart. She watches. We thank them so much for their support. Jab says, why are your commercials so loud? Because I'm talking louder. I don't know. Are commercials louder? Do we turn up? Chad, do you turn up the commercials?
I don't.
I'm going to talk more quietly from now on.
Just bring it down. I'll bring it down.
I think it's because the rest of us aren't talking.
That's why. Hey, before we get back to CES, I think we should mention Aaron Swartz. What an interesting fella. Teen prodigy. If you read Cory Doctorow on Boing Boing, had a very touching, heartfelt eulogy for Aaron. Larry Lessig, who knew Aaron, had a very touching eulogy. Everybody seemed to know this kid, starting with around the age of 14 when he started showing up at computer conferences and trade shows. He was right about that age when he helped write the specification for RSS, which we use every day. That's how we do podcasts. He wrote some of the early code for Reddit. And sold the code to Reddit. And he's sometimes called a founder. I don't think that's quite accurate, but he certainly wrote much of the code that Reddit's running. And he became a political activist in a very interesting way. Larry Lessig wrote, he was brilliant and funny, a kid genius, a soul, a conscience, the source of a question I've asked myself a million times. What would Aaron think? This is Larry Lessig, the Harvard constitutional law professor. Unfortunately, Aaron committed suicide, killed himself on Friday at the age of 26. And Larry Lessig and many others, including the family, blame the U.S. government. Larry says that person has gone today, driven to the edge by what a decent society would only call bullying. I get wrong, but I also get proportionality. And if you don't get both, you don't deserve to have the power of the United States government behind you. Here's what happened. Aaron believed, like all hackers, that information wants to be free. There's a video of Aaron speaking. He started freeing information early on. It's interesting. He liberated the U.S. Legal code. So there's a system called PACER that gives you, in the United States, gives us access to case law, paid access to case law. Now, case law is public domain. Case law is what all the courts have ruled about stuff. It's what you would use if you were defending yourself, what the precedents, what the legal precedents are. You know, every lawyer has a law library, but then they also go online to PACER. And for a fee, they download these judgments. But those judgments belong to all of us. They're public domain. They're the U.S. courts. So activists built something called Recap and encouraged its users to take their case law downloads after they did it and post them on Recap, perfectly legal, because it's our stuff. And Recap was free and open, and anybody can use it. Well, Aaron took some of the money he made from the sale of Reddit and bought 20% of the PACER content and posted it on Recap. That's a guy who believes information should be free. In trouble with the feds. The FBI investigated him. Cory Doctorow says it looked like he'd be on the pointy end of some bad legal stuff, but he escaped it all and emerged triumphant. Because, in fact, he didn't break any laws. There wasn't a thing to do. But he did raise the ire of the United States federal law enforcement.
He annoyed a lot of people doing that.
He annoyed people. He founded a group called Demand Progress, which was one of the real effective groups in fighting SOPA and PIPA last year. So he might have, I don't know, he did something that was a little reckless, let's say. There is another database, kind of like the PACER database. It's called JSTOR. It's an academic journal database, and it charges money for access to academic journals. Now, these aren't quite exactly in the public domain. Some of these studies were paid for by federal funds. Some of the studies are academic and paid for by universities. But it's often been a bone of contention that this stuff, for society's sake, should be widely available. That the scientific journals, anybody should be able to access them, shouldn't have to pay for it. He was associated with Harvard. Harvard had an account with JSTOR. He used his legitimate account, but he did something JSTOR says you can't do, which is download in bulk. He, in fact, took a laptop, snuck it into MIT, put it in a closet in MIT.
Connected it.
And downloaded the entire database.
You want to think 20%?
Is it that little? I thought it was more. Anyway, well, gigabytes.
No, he took all of it, I think.
A lot. I don't know how much.
Yes, he took a lot.
JSTOR, when they caught him, actually, he turned himself in. JSTOR and MIT decided to prosecute. The feds, of course, said, yeah, we finally got this kid. Eventually, JSTOR backed down. In fact, an interesting thing, JSTOR just a few weeks ago decided to make all of that information public anyway. MIT, according to Lessig, was a little more equivocal in its backing down, giving the federal prosecutors, sufficient reason to continue forward. Aaron was facing 50 years in jail, a $4 million fine. The trial was to come in April. Now,
Totally disproportionate.
They were treating him like a terrorist.
They're trying to make an example out of him.
They implied that he was stealing this data to sell it, which he wasn't. He wanted to make it publicly available. However, he did break laws. Although
just not really 50 years worth of laws.
Not 50. Yeah. Now, Corey writes, Aaron was a person who had problems with depression for many years. He'd written about the subject publicly, talked about it with his friends. And, of course, there are many things that might cause a person to want to take his own life. But his friends, his family, and Larry Lessig do think that the unreasonable, disproportionate reaction of the federal government had something to do with it. The thought of being in prison for 50 years might have had something to do with it. So our deepest condolences to all who knew Aaron Swartz, to his family, to his partner. It is just a horrible tragedy. I don't think that it's really appropriate to say it's all the Fed's fault, but it's certainly appropriate to shine a light on their inappropriate prosecution. And I think it's a great loss for all of us. It's very sad.
I think one of the things we can take away, there are an interesting couple of things that are happening. So academics are starting to post PDFs of some of their material and open sourcing it and put it on Twitter so that it's sort of like a tribute to, you know, make some information free. But I think one of the other things that we can really take away from this is, on like kind of a serious and slightly grim note, is that mental health and depression is something that affects
Absolutely.
A lot of people. It affects a lot of people in the kind of geek and nerd community. Many of us kind of, you can laugh it off as being a little bit, I'm a bit antisocial because I'm a bit of a geek. But I think we all have a little bit of responsibility just to try and look after the people that are near us and try and try and get people to get help if they need it.
Now, Larry points out that Aaron had many friends in San Francisco, and he was beloved by many. He was not, somebody who was cut off from society.
No.
So I don't want to even speculate on what happened. The expert witness who was going to testify on his behalf, Alex Stamos, who is a computer security and forensic expert, called the case vindictive. He said that Aaron did not hack the JSTOR website. He just wrote, for any reasonable definition of hack, he wrote a handful of basic Python scripts that discovered the URLs of articles, then used curl to request them. He did not use parameter tampering. He did not break a CAPTCHA. He did not, do anything sneaky. He did not cover his tracks or hide his activity. The government provided no evidence that these downloads caused a negative effect on either JSTOR or MIT. It's very sad.
Beyond the tragedy of losing someone who was so intelligent, who was a visionary, who was actually fighting for the free information rights of anyone who's ever used an electronic resource, I think there's another story here, which is how desperate the DOJ and the federal government is to have some sort of strong case that establishes their version of copyright and property laws in the digital domain. We saw it with the defeat of SOPA and PIPA. We saw it with the bungled prosecution of Kim.com and Mega Upload. And we see it here.
Yeah.
And they're so desperate for a win that I think that's where that bully attitude comes into. We want to make an example out of you.
There's also a fear of technology that drives a little bit of this. I think some of the overreaction to hacking in general is this.
We've only
fear.
Got to look at the composition of, like, the Congressional Science Committee, which is full of people who don't believe in science.
They don't like science.
That's science, not a great evil start. So I think, again, it's one of those things where I feel like change is, in some of these cases, is generational, that you get a new generation of lawmakers or a new generation of people in power, in government, in society, and attitudes change along with that. But there's always the guys that want to go down kicking and screaming on the way out.
Yep. This is just horrible.
It is horrible.
So Brewster Kahle of archive.org, Carl Malamud, who is the transparent government activist, and others have created a electronic Aaron Schwartz collection on archive.org. The web team of the Internet Archive, writes Brewster, have been archiving all the Aaron SW sites they're finding. Aaron has quite a few. And if you have some digital archives, email, photos, code, the Aaron Schwartz collection is right now going up on archive.org/details/AaronSW. I think this is a wonderful idea to save all this stuff. And an interesting thing's happening on Twitter. Have you seen the PDF protest? And Anonymous has gotten behind this, which is kind of interesting. If you search for, what is it, PDF, can't remember if it's protest. Academics are posting links to PDFs. I'm sorry, PDF Tribute is the hashtag. So look at PDF Tribute. The first post is from Anonymous. Please share academics posting their papers online in tribute to Aaron Schwartz using the hashtag PDF Tribute. So they're uploading, in some cases illegally, because they don't own the rights to it, academic articles that should be part of the commons, because this is stuff that we all need to know. And then they're posting it on Twitter.
Freeing the information.
Freeing the information. I think that's a really wonderful tribute to him, too. Good going. And if you're a researcher or a scientist and you want to do this in honor of Aaron, please do. I never met him. I don't know him. I know many people who did know him, including Corey and Larry Lessig, Dave Weiner, many people, Doc Searles. Mm-hmm. Doc has a picture of him at 14 with Dave Weiner in the background. He's writing RSS, the RSS spec.
You know, what's interesting is he could have just taken what he knew and his talent, and he could have just amassed himself a personal fortune.
He could have cashed out. Yeah,
he could have cashed out. He could have totally went, like the route that we see today, where people become, superstars and they can trade on their name for all sorts of favors. And he didn't. He actually became a very proactive in making sure that he held on to his beliefs despite all the stuff that happened to him. And I think what's so amazing is that, what's kind of sad, besides the suicide, is that he is a rather rare individual in that respect. I mean, it'd be one thing to say if there were, literally thousands of Aaron, Swartzes around, but they're not.
Yeah. Here's a picture that Doc posted from an O'Reilly conference in 2002 when Aaron was 15. That's Dave Weiner.
Oh, my gosh.
In the background. It was the same year. Doc says, I booked him for a panel at Comdex in Las Vegas. His mom dropped him off. His computer was an old Mac laptop with a broken screen that was so dim I couldn't read it, but he could, and he rationalized it as a security precaution. This was a very smart, very precocious kid, and we're very sorry to have lost him so young. So I just wanted to – I thought it was really important that we talk about this. You can read a lot more if you just search for Aaron Swartz, S-W-A-R-T-Z, on the Internet. There's just a ton of stuff out there. And it's a sad story. We had reported on the JSTOR story several times and talked about it. But just for it to end this way – 2 years to the day, by the way, that of his arrest. So imagine, after 2 years – he was facing not 50, 30 years in prison.
It's not a lot better.
When you're 26, 30 years in prison, he'd be my age when he got out. That's like the worst thing that could happen to a 26-year-old.
Being Leo's age.
Oh, my God. I'm practically dead. Let's talk about CES. It's almost seems so trivial, doesn't it?
Speaking of practically dead.
Yeah. Do you hate CES?
I
you love it.
I hate CES while I'm at CES.
It's a love-hate thing.
It is. And I always say I'm never going to go back, and I go back each and every year.
I hate it.
I'm never going back.
If I didn't have to for work, I would never go again.
First of all, the economy sucks. So the innovation flatlined. I mean, the stories that we got out of CES were a potty trainer with an iPad stand. Everybody reported on that like that was a big deal. The haptic fork.
Happy fork.
You know why Happy Fork got so much coverage? It's the reason you covered it, I understand. The press is lazy. Not us, but this was your assignment. I said you're going to the very first CES event, CES Unveiled, which apparently had a dearth of products.
Yeah. It did have Gallagher, though.
Gallagher, great. Smashing watermelons. You know, wonderful.
The best thing at CES Unveiled was the ice sculpture they had that you could pour martinis through.
And you can't report on that.
Yeah. That was about it.
So Sunday night, every media organization in the world goes to CES Unveiled hoping because you want to get the lead on everybody jumping on it. Now, we assigned this to you. You had to do it. And there's really only one thing there of any interest at all. It's a vibrating fork. So you covered it, but it's not just you. The Huffington Post, ABC, NBC. But it's like the biggest thing that ever happened.
Why does it vibrate?
It vibrates if you eat too quickly. So... Which I already vibrate if I eat too quickly, so I'm not really sure what that's for. The idea is it gives you feedback. So, yeah, it does all the count. It has a Bluetooth connection.
It's $100.
It's $100 fork.
And you need an iPhone or an Android phone.
You know, I don't know. I kind of disagree with you guys. I thought CES this year was really good, and I thought there were a lot of interesting things.
Let me ask you, how many CESs have you been to?
Seven.
Oh, well, he's got standing.
This was number 12 for me, and I can honestly say I was done at number 10.
I was too.
And I ran into Leo over at the food court, and I said this to Leo. I went to the LG, the Panasonic, and the Sharp, the Toshiba keynotes, and one thing that I noticed about all of them is like, literally half their news presentations were dedicated to new appliances.
And yeah, refrigerators.
Refrigerators.
Microwaves.
Washing machines. New convection, microwave, you know, combination ovens. And they were all touting some sort of interactive cross-platform with Bluetooth or RFID and your phone. It's like, you know, hey, come up to your washing machine, pass your phone over by the detector, and it'll tell how to wash your clothes. It's like, why don't you just set the dials like you normally do and press start? It's they're literally finding excuses to literally drop all this R&D and all this stuff that they've developed that they can't really move anymore because everyone's bought the HDTVs. Everyone has a tablet. Everyone has a phone. And they're trying to drum up excitement to get kind of consumers buying it. And people are saying, well, look, I'm tapped out. I really don't need it. And there's really nothing that special about it. I mean, 4K TVs look awesome. They're great. Not enough content. I know there are movies coming out. There are movies already shot that were shot in 4K that you can put on it. But are you going to really spend $12,000 to upgrade from your HDTV right now when the amount of content that is in that?
But that's not the point. You still have to develop the stuff even without the content. I mean, the content's coming down the line. The point about CES is that, you know, it's the stuff that you're going to see mainstream in 12, 18, 24 months. You can't say that there's no content now. So it's not
that there's no content. I think it's stale content.
Cover story on The Economist this week. It's from Britain. It's good. Rodin's famous sculpture, The Thinker, you know, he's sitting with his hand on his chin. He's sitting on a toilet.
Oh, that's a great
and
article.
The headline, will we ever invent anything this useful again? The growing debate about dwindling innovation. Now, I am not going to be like that patent inspector in 1920 who said everything's been invented. That's obviously not the case. But it does feel like we're on a plateau, does it not?
I think maybe you could get that impression maybe if all you were doing was looking at CES. I think one of the trends that comes out of CES this year is that increasingly the big companies that have got really big stuff,
they do their own thing.
They're doing their own thing.
Right.
But if you look at, you know, big picture, think about what's happened in the last year. You've got, you know, SpaceX blasting off into space. You've got Tesla delivering the first, you know, all-electric sedan. You've got all, you know...
There's lots of interesting stuff.
But if you go to CES, mostly what you're seeing is amazing televisions, some nice tablets, some nice laptops, and some fridges with Evernote.
But see, that's why I almost never cover the central hall. I stay away, on purpose, stay away from the central hall, because that's bigger TVs, bigger appliances, internet-connected toasters.
Yeah.
I try to go to the Innovation Pavilion. So I spend a lot of time in the Venetian, a lot of time in the South Hall, where I get to see technologies that are in their rawest form, like, you know, flexible displays and curved displays and haptic feedback that could be used for something later on. That's where the innovation comes. Oh, that's the Qualcomm, isn't it?
Yeah. Don't keep going. Keep talking. I'm just going to undermine you later. Go ahead.
So there were a few diamonds in the rough. The problem is this year it was a really loud CES, and so it was incredibly hard to find it. In fact, the two that were pushed above all the noise were the Happy Fork and the
because it was the first thing anybody saw.
Yes.
And tech journalists now have become like ducklings. They got imprinted by the first gadget they saw, and that was the story of CES.
And the Oculus Rift.
Yeah, but that's not that.
First of all, it's not out. It's a Kickstarter project. It's in prototype. I'm actually going to get one. I donated to it, but have we not seen virtual reality visors for the last 20 years?
It's nice, but it's still a little heavy. It's still a little bulky, and there's still a degree of you're only going to use this if you're a geek,
right? I think the reason to go to CES, if you go, is to see the TVs, because everything else you can read about online, and as you say, Microsoft, Apple, Samsung all announced their big products at their own events, not at CES. But you can't see the TVs, this year's and maybe next year's TV, unless you go to CES. And I have to say, 4K Ultra HD looks great.
It looks awesome.
Even better, Ultra HD OLED.
Yeah, that
looks
Sony OLED.
Freaking amazing.
Oh.
I can't wait to see that. So I have to say, I do believe that there is some stuff there that's innovative and interesting.
Yeah. And the price came down. I think it was only $14,000.
Yeah. Did you see the Hisense had a 110-inch Ultra HD display for... Oh, no, this is Westinghouse's. Hisense had one, too. Westinghouse's was only $300,000.
Oh, it's okay.
Not bad. And you have to take the roof off to get it in the door.
The best thing I saw at the Hisense booth was honestly a band.
By the way, we should just say Hisense was in Microsoft's booth.
Oh, it was
Microsoft's replacement.
So the thing they had at their booth was like every hour, like on the hour, they'd have a band that jammed playing one guy on a didgeridoo, a girl on a violin, a guy with a steel drum, a guy with bongos, and all they would do was like run around the booth, like prance around the booth, having like a jam didgeridoo session.
It was really obnoxious.
It was absolutely the right. But imagine that with a little bit of like a.
Okay, I got to play the video.
Crazy.
So instead of Microsoft, is this where the video? I want to find the video, the Qualcomm video. Do you have that, Chad? So it's Microsoft for the first year in a long time, no keynote, was Gates for a long time. Then it was Ballmer. Uh-huh. It was the first keynote of CES on Monday night, leading off the Tuesday opening. This time it was Qualcomm.
I mean, you couldn't pick a company could that's more opposite, it, could you?
We don't have to because The Verge did a great cutdown of what has to be the strangest...
Bizarre.
I didn't go. Did you go?
No.
I'm so sad now.
I watched the highlights.
Here's the highlights from The Verge. I've got a video. I don't know if this is the one.
It was watching a train wreck. It was so bad, you just wanted to stay and see if it was going to get any
worse. You could play my screen. I think this is it. I don't know.
Brian Bishop, and I can see through space and time. This is 90 Seconds on The Verge, presented by Ford. Last night, Qualcomm gave what was without question the craziest presentation of CES so far.
No, this isn't it. I want to see
an in-house and online audience.
This isn't it. I gotta find it. Maybe it's on YouTube. Because the cutdown.
Chad's got it.
Chad, you got it. All right, the cutdown really brings it all together.
Yeah, I just have to wait for this ad to
yeah, the ad. YouTube's got a lot of ads these days. Somebody's making money.
Now, I love it.
I need to make money.
I don't know if Chad can find it, but someone gift a bomber running across a stage with a digital cake in front of him. It was actually pretty good.
I have to say, Samsung had Bill Clinton
yeah.
at their keynote. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And Samsung, by the way, because we talked about it the week before, they sent out a very cryptic invitation, a new shape for television sets. Right. People were speculating maybe it's portrait, maybe it's see-through. Turns out to be a freaking TV on an easel.
Yep.
Like a blackboard. Here we go. This is the CES keynote from Qualcomm.
Happy New Year.
I'm part of a new generation. Texting.
Texting.
I'm John, better known by Tornado. Tornado 92.
These are actors.
I just pulled half the world from backstage. So eat it, Volcano Mom 53. Ooh! I have a sweet job and a hot girlfriend. And by hot, I mean like... Fuego?
My phone is my conference room. Heads up.
I met a kid like this on the street, I'd punch him in the nose. Watch, he's going to go...
Style.
Boom.
Can you dig
Can we stop doing boom?
Dig it.
We're born mobile.
We're born mobile.
You got to be mobile if you want to be a top dog.
Or a tough ass.
Nothing but catchphrases.
Or super popular.
I think there was supposed to be applause there.
A CEO.
Oh.
Microsoft took a major step forward. And there he is!
Steve Ballmer runs on stage.
It's like your crazy uncle running.
Watch this, because he tries to interrupt Steve.
In the last month alone, CNN, Sony's Crackle, Songza, Twitter, Expedia, and Fitbit.
They also have plenty of
Huffington Post.
You don't stop the bomber.
Don't get in the way of that train wreck.
Where's my water application?
We're working with some amazing people. Please welcome Del Toro.
Yay.
Here's Guillermo Del Toro.
Alice Eve.
What's she in? Is she famous?
Star Trek.
She's
Star Trek.
New Star Trek. Oh, she's the new Star Trek.
Everybody's favorite 8-foot feathered friend, Big Bird. All right.
Big Bird's followed by...
A guy in like a creepy Big Bird outfit.
Archbishop Desmond Tutu. There's a segue.
That's just...
I know, that was like, what?
And a Rolls Royce.
Ladies and gentlemen,
it's the
Maroon
Pope.
5.
but wait a minute. Something went wrong in Maroon 5 singing, but Dido is playing.
Oh, yeah.
Hello.
We're calling Gen M now, the Born Mobile generation.
Born Mobile generation. Born Mobile?
If you have
born
legs,
mobile.
You're Born Mobile.
Born Mobile.
Exactly.
Oh, I mean, it's just absolutely...
So
it's so awkward.
I'm so grateful to The Verge for making that cut down.
It's really bizarre, but it also just shows that, you know... A lot of companies have spent a lot of money on honing their PR and kind of their presentation, and Qualcomm clearly hasn't. It's
Qualcomm doesn't even sell to end users.
No, it's a
B2B brand. Yeah. They just put chips in phones.
They put chips in phones. There's nothing to cover here.
Tornado guy is not walking into the shop going, give me a Qualcomm phone.
I gotta have Qualcomm. I was
so I can pwn backstage.
Boom.
Well, you know what? If anything,
boom.
If anything, it's actually a very brilliant press move because think about it, we're all talking about it, so is everyone else.
We got a Luke Ballmer running in following a cake. That's good.
You know, it's,
he had to be chasing something. It was like a greyhound and a rabbit. There was something going on. He was really running.
Or Twit.
I love this too with the fingers. Yeah. Look at the fingers. What is that?
Or Twit 388, you don't stop the Ballmer.
You can't stop the Ballmer. Don't stop the Ballmer.
He never gets any less creepy.
No, he's so strange.
It looks like he should be living in a van by the river.
Uncle Fester, they're calling him in the chat room.
Gosh, he does. That was just a weird keynote. Just a weird way
It was. And it's the old Microsoft keynote, which is why Ballmer's there. He did it last year, and so they just wanted to kind of the traditional handoff of the cake from one keynote.
Some handoff.
To another. All right, there's got to be some products. Look at all this crap that Father Robert Ballister.
I think you mean amazing consumer electronic technology.
This is amazing.
Wait. Let's take a break. When we come back, you've also got a bag of crap. Where's the bag of?
This is so. If you ever want to know what happens at CES,
we're going to show you what's in the bag coming up. There's a tease. You want?
What's in the bag? Padre SJ.
Next on Twit.
I need a lighter.
Okay, he's going to run off like this. This show brought to you by Gazelle.com. You know, there are products you might want to buy. For instance, maybe you want to trade an iPad 3 for an iPad 4. You want to get a new phone. Maybe you've got an iPhone 5 and said, I'd like to get a Galaxy Note. You can get cash for your old gadgets. I know a lot of us just throw these gadgets in a drawer. Wait a minute. Now, here's my iPhone 5. It's in flawless condition. And it's $430, Gazelle. Now, this is a beauty thing. This is a hard offer from Gazelle, as long as it matches the condition that I specified. I have 30 days to cash in on it, so I can wait. In fact, it's a good idea to go to Gazelle.com right now, get quotes for your stuff, and maybe you're waiting for the next thing to come out. You can get that quote, and that quote is good. 30 days. Free shipping on anything worth more than a buck, and then fast payment. They'll send you a check. You get a PayPal credit. Or I like this, the Amazon gift card, which gives you 5% more when you take that, the Amazon. If you buy a lot of stuff on Amazon, you might as well do that. Their data experts will also wipe the data, so you don't have to worry about that. iPads, iPhones, Android phones, even Blackberries. You know, this is an exercise in futility, but I'm just wondering if I can get anything for that AT&T Blackberry Curve I have. What, you want to take a guess how much that Curve is worth? $5? $10?
$10.
Let's see. It's in flawless shape because I never used it. free of water damage. Let's just see. Hey, that's
Whoa.
Not bad.
Whoa.
$66. I'll take $66. So you throw it in a box. They pay the postage. In fact, what happens is you get all this stuff together and then you say, okay, go. And they'll mail you the box and the mailing label and everything so you don't have to pay shipping. iPods, MacBooks. Even Mac Minis, Mac Pros, and iMacs. I actually now have my new iMac. Maybe I should send them the old iMac. Gazelle.com. They have sent out, to date, more than $50 million to over 300,000 customers. That is a great deal. Find out what your iPhone or other device is worth. Get some cash to buy the next one or just to pay rent. Gazelle.com. All right, so you have a bag.
I have a bag. This is the distillment of everything you get from the CES press room.
You got the over-the-shoulder shot, Chad, so I can show you. I can dump out the bag. What do you got, Winnie the Pooh on TV back there? All right, here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, this is what you got at the press room. Let's see. Oh, my God. Wow.
So this is a year's supply of USB drives.
Keys. Now, are they all teensy-weensy?
No, Kingston was giving away 32 gigabyte ones.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
This one is also a bottle opener. So I'm not really sure what's on these things.
That's the other essential thing to see, yes.
But, you know, we used to come back with reams of paper. So this is probably a better, at least it's usable.
And you can reuse them.
Yeah. This was the booth that had naked women who would come out every 15 minutes.
Was that the body painted people?
Yep. Yep.
That was really, was bizarre. I thought booth babes were bad, but this is ridiculous. Yeah, they were wearing panties, right?
Yes.
I didn't look. You.
They had bottoms.
It was actually in the Twit special coverage, but I don't think it made the final cut.
I hope not. So they were wearing because I went there early and I saw them being painted. And I thought, what the hell is this going to be? And then I later saw a picture. They were wearing panties, but nothing else. Nothing and they were else. Painted.
And they would go out every 15 minutes. They would go out in the middle of the booth. They had this little podium stage type thing.
And just stand there.
They would just stand there.
With a glazed look.
And there was no one in the booth except for that 5-minute presentation.
And what were they? What was this product they were selling?
I don't know. I do not know.
But I can guarantee you it had nothing to do with body painting or naked women.
No.
And by the way, the most offensive thing I heard was that they called them fembots. Ugh. So there you go. So,
welcome to 2013.
Yeah. You know, for a while, there was a brief period when the whole idea of having attractive naked women
declined.
Or semi-naked women declined. But now it's back in force.
I volunteered to be painted. They did not. They did not take me.
I think a couple of chunky guys like you and me,
it would have evened it out.
That definitely would have gotten some attention.
Call
to
us
the trade
fat,
and then people would be going, what are you selling?
Yeah, I don't want to look at that. But what else you got?
Yeah, it might be more effective. It's certainly less. Maybe not less offensive.
The booth anti babe. That's what we need.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think they just cut back on it. For a couple of years, just because they didn't have the money to pay for
them. They couldn't afford him.
But that's not all there was at CES.
There was a hashtag as a result, by the way, of not buying it hashtag that I was probably started by people who were offended by the booth babes, but they said, I'm not buying whatever it is you're selling because I don't. Here, let me. I have to look.
Oh, that particular booth did.
Oh, yeah. Really?
That's, maybe I should plug this in and find out what they were actually selling.
Yeah, Hypermac, yep. Yep.
What were they selling?
Unbelievable. So not buying it because this is an appropriate way to sell hard drives. And then, of course, the picture. So you know what we're talking about.
That's it.
Oh, Hypermac. I know who Hypermac is. That has nothing to do with what they sell. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. And there were quite a few not buying it.
I was just looking for the angle.
Or something there of Hypermac.
Say again?
Roll up a couple?
Say again?
CEO behind Hype. Oh, no. He's putting. That's not good.
Yeah. What? Dehumanizing women as a CEO behind Hypermac. Chin Daniel, are you supportive of dehumanizing women? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Backlash.
It was the weirdest presentation ever because they didn't smile. They didn't move.
They're robots.
They would. No, exactly. They would do this.
Like
robots. They did that?
They would do that.
They move their arms like robots?
Why don't you just get them in robot suits?
I'll tell you one thing that I saw that was not there. 3D TV. Well, there was a little bit of it, but not much.
No. There was some.
LG was stuck because they bought that giant 3D display. They had to do that. But there weren't a lot of glasses put on.
Well, that was a lot of headlines this year. Which is 3D dead?
I saw one from Stream TV over at, Digital
Twitter. This is the glasses free TV.
Oh, my God. That thing gave me
a migraine.
Does it work? It works. It gives you a migraine, though. It's ridiculous.
So the idea is they're doing some sort of weird diffraction thing so that you don't have to wear glasses and you can move. It's not lenticular, right?
Oh, yeah. You can shift around. The thing is the image is kind of wavy, kind of like if you have too much to drink.
Oh, great.
And so it's Grace was with me, and she was sick immediately, and it took me about 2 minutes. I was sick for the next 10 minutes. I was like not vertigo, but kind of borderline nauseous.
Like motion sickness that you get from playing a bad video game or something.
That's a successful product.
And I was like, it's great. And then 2 minutes later, it's like, I don't feel so well.
What happens if if you drink whilst you're watching it? Does that then counteract to the two forces?
Maybe.
Maybe it's the drunk TV.
I've never seen so many USB keys in my life.
Dude,
is it allowed that you took three from Heiner?
No, see, you wait till Friday. You make friends with the woman who's actually guarding the USB keys.
Oh.
And you open her bag and she just dumps a bunch of stuff
in. So you socially engineered your way into extra USB drives.
Well, these are the keys I will use for the next year.
These are the hot commodities from CES.
It's the power of Jesus. That's what he does.
The power of Jesus compels you to give me that USB key.
The multiplication of the USB drives.
You see the collar?
That's right.
So
Christ compels
you. So the idea is that these are their press kits.
Correct.
They don't have to give you press kits. They just give you these USB keys with the press kit. And you might presume some of these companies.
Occasionally you might look at them, but usually you just reformat the thumb drive and stick whatever right. family photo.
What this tells you, though, is how cheap this stuff is.
It's great.
I don't trust these. Because it's so easy to put an AutoScript tool on one of these things so that when you plug it into your computer, it just infects you. I wipe them. They all wiped.
Yeah. How do you, is there a technique so that, because you can't really stick them in anywhere.
I have a little mini ITX computer
that's made for that.
You plug a USB device into it and it just wipes it out.
It's called Father Robert Ballister's free USB key wiper.
That's right.
Padre, the
chat. You can just plug it into a Unix or Linux box.
I just plugged
them into the Twit computers.
You got seven hires.
Nice. Wow. are those going into the...
Well, those are solid metal.
The donation... Nice.
No way.
Oh,
Padre, the chat room says that rather than fembots, you should go next year with some Max Trollbots.
I like that.
We'll
bring them. All right. I've just sorted these out.
It's like, Hot Wheels collection.
12, 13, 14. You've got 28 USB keys.
Well, yeah, then there's a couple over there.
29, 30, 31.
I may have a lot.
Wow. Power of Twit compels you. All right. What did you see that was cool? Besides fembots.
Coolest thing I saw, and it got no press, which is why I like talking about it, is this thing. This is actually...
Wait a minute. Don't tell us. Maybe we can let the people... Let's play a little version with Roger
Chat room roulette.
And Will. Can you tell us, what is this? Now, I'll give you a hand. It's got a screen on the front. It's got little metal thing clips on the side. I want to hide any information that's written
looks
on the like back.
Looks like
on-off switches.
No, it looks like one of those things that you like, that you like an air freshener thing that you plug
it's
into
an air freshener. I thought it might be a USB speaker. We saw about eight, or a Bluetooth speaker. We saw about 800 Bluetooth speakers.
Looks like a cooler that's powered through USB.
Look at that. I think Jeff N. got it right. He says it's a fuel cell.
There we go.
Very, very
so
cool.
So air goes in here and it gives you power.
Well, okay, so we've got these. These are cartridges, which have, it's like sodium polysilicate. It's basically a bunch of crystals.
They call it Power Trek. Power Trek. K's.
And what you do is you have this. There's a little water reservoir. I have that filled up with water. This is a fresh cartridge. That one's expended. Okay. You put this in like that.
Yeah.
Take this.
Take
this
the case.
This has the proton exchange membrane in it.
Sorry. The what?
The proton exchange membrane. And
I might just move this way.
Now, what's happening is it's pumped a little bit of that water into the canister, and it's now feeding hydrogen into this. And if it's working properly,
it'll charge up a phone.
I should be able to plug in my phone.
Did you put water in there? Would you want some whiskey? Would that make it work better?
it'll work drunk. And I just do this to activate it, make sure it's getting hydrogen, and
so
I don't
air,
know if you can see that, now it's charging.
It's a chemical reaction from the air or from the water?
From the water. So the water's the fuel. It's actually splitting. It's liberating the hydrogen from the water.
And then burning it?
And then it goes, it doesn't burn it. It goes into the proton exchange membrane. What you get out is water vapor and power.
We've seen these before that use air.
Right.
So how much power do you get from one of these?
You get 4 hours of power from each one of those pucks.
And a puck costs?
A puck costs $2.
Now, here's the beauty part. After the puck has been used up, and this one's used up, right?
Right.
So I can open it up?
Well, it's sealed. We'd have to get Burke to open it up.
But you can use what's left over as toothpaste.
Right.
Or shoe polish.
Or shoe polish. Wait, are those things interchangeable?
Or floor wax?
Have I been cleaning my shoes?
How do you open
with the wrong...
it?
You'd have to get pliers to pop.
So it's not intended to be like a portable toothpaste.
It's not a toothpaste.
They should put
dispenser.
A little squeezy thing.
I wonder
it.
If they denature it.
What does it taste like? Did you try it?
Actually, I did.
Hey, Burke, can you open this up? Is Burke here? Can you open this up? I want to try the whatever this is.
I don't think he works on Sunday.
But they did pitch this, right? This is a usable side effect. John, do we have any pliers? Here he comes.
John's got the pliers.
What is it made out of?
It's sodium polysilicate. It's the abrasive element for toothpaste.
Oh, well, it's not toothpaste. It's something that's in toothpaste.
Well, because you add flavoring into toothpaste so people don't gag when they...
Are they promoting the idea that you might want to use this later? Can I open this?
Yeah, sure.
I should ask you before. You might want to be using this for... he's inching away.
Everyone's moving.
It just creates hydrogen. I mean, that's just explosive.
Oh.
No, just kidding. It's expanded.
It's flammable.
That's right, right. It just burns
quickly.
Don't
blow it up. It's fine. We haven't got anything that could set anything alive.
I mean, oxygen and...
But the other cool thing about this is it's an unlimited shelf life. So you could get a bunch of these pucks, and they'll sit on the shelf forever until you need them.
Oh, that's neat.
Until the end of the world.
Until the zombie apocalypse.
And so you need no power. It creates power from pure, plain old water.
Right. It's a company called MyFC, My Fuel Cell.
We've seen fuel cells, a variety of fuel cells before. I used to have hearing aid batteries.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, there's been a company called Horizon that's been making fuel cells for a while. But this is actually portable and affordable. This thing, the unit's about $200 to $229, which that's pricey, but still for a fuel cell, that's cheap. And the pucks are $2 to $4 each, depending on how much capacity you want out of them. And each one of these could power up your phone. It could power up your lighting, if you have emergency LED lighting, your GPS device. They sell it as a sort of a ruggedized outdoor device.
Yeah, for camping, that's a, you know, like an emergency thing.
Yeah.
Safe for aircraft cabins, it says.
I actually brought this on the plane.
Well, that would make me nervous.
They gave me two of them. The other one is currently on its way to Seattle, I think, because Delta doesn't like me.
All right. What else did you see of interest?
Well, this actually...
There were a lot of headphones.
Yes.
Oh, celebrity headphones. I'm so over.
Is that all because of Dr. Dre? Is that... Yeah. Can we blame Beats for this?
I made the mistake of going into the Monster press event.
That's a problem.
And I have never seen... we're probably never going to get products from them again. I've never seen so much shown... without seeing no new technical advancements. Headphones. It's literally all they did was announce new partnerships. So they had Exhibit, Nick Cannon, Sheila E., Sugar Ray Leonard, all on stage, kind of talking about these new headphones. And they were, it was funny because I think Sugar Ray wanted to leave as quickly as possible. But you could just see, it's like, why am I standing here? There's just a bunch of models with like fake rhinestone headphones prancing around the room.
I don't want to get sodium silicate all over everything.
It might.
Well, don't get them on the thumb drives. They could still be useful.
It will drip.
The whole celebrity headphone thing is very strange, and it's.
I think it says a lot about CES. Really, CES is about marketing. It's about.
Definitely.
You know, BS. It's not about innovation in any way, really.
It's about making something attractive enough that Best Buy or whatever electronics store is going to care.
Okay, but let's think about the stuff that was good. Did you guys see the Steam Box?
Yes, I went
This is exciting. This was 3i.
No, the XI3.
So XI3. That's
the company, or that's the.
They've been making these beautiful little mini ITX. Cases for a while.
Now, this is the thing. They will neither confirm nor deny that they have anything to do with the new Steam Box because of contractual obligations.
Okay.
But, I mean, you can kind of put two and two together. But what's so great about it, if you actually haven't seen these things, they're super tiny.
They're beautiful.
You have one on screen. They are powered by AMD chips with embedded GPUs on the core.
I priced one out just to see, about $1,000. Are the AMD processors okay in here?
Well, that's the big question mark, because AMD has traditionally trailed Intel when it's come to out-and-out performance. But one of the things that XI3 was touting was because, you know, it's literally GPU on die and the rest, the power usage is so low. He was on one of the lower usage models of their entry-level unit was about, I think, 14 watts, and then 18 at max.
They have a Athlon 2000 Plus version with 8 watts of power use.
Athlon 2000 Plus?
The 3400E is 22 watts.
Lord, that is...
It's kind of old.
Old school.
Yeah, it's pretty old, isn't it?
The exciting thing is that whatever this Steam Box ends up being, Valve is trying to develop, you know, basically, you know, Steam has become the sort of ubiquitous PC development platform. Trying to put that on a little box underneath your TV in the same way that an Xbox or a PlayStation might.
I've been very excited about this for a couple of weeks because I've been playing with the Steam. What do they call it?
Big picture.
It looks great. It's it's an easy to use, big TV interface. But what you'd get is PC games, and in theory, for roughly the price of a PS3 or an Xbox 360, you'd get PC gaming via Steam on your big screen TV.
And what they're saying is that the Valve software for the new whatever it is they develop will actually come on a box that's powerful enough to power multiple screens, so you could have multiple player gaming on multiple screens off a single unit.
Piston was shown with two
I wouldn't try that.
With three video outputs, one HDMI, the other one a digital.
But really, I don't know how much that is going to be a driver. Just the idea that I get a $300 or $400 box, put it in my living room, HDMI it into my big screen TV, comes with a controller, sit back and play the best quality games. Because frankly, console gaming is a little bit stuck in the doldrums because it's been so long since the last update.
And I think what's so great about it is now you actually do have a very compelling home theater PC device, something that isn't ungainly or awkward to plug
in. These are beautiful.
They're really small, and they're very innocuous. I mean, you could literally even if you say you lived in a smallish apartment, you could put one near your HDTV, and you could run all your media
through
it.
They've got a Visa mounting bracket for it, so you could actually mount it on the back of a monitor, and you'd never see it.
So having said that, I thought it was a really exciting idea. I think it's interesting, and I think it's innovative. I think it's completely useless.
What?
I just don't see that if the last decade of home theater PC building has taught us anything, is that nobody really cares about building home theater PCs.
Look at these.
They like Xboxes. They like PS3s.
Look at the Windows Media Center.
Windows Media Center that's been killed off in Windows 8.
Died.
The Windows Home Theater PC server thing that sat and served.
But those were media centers, not gaming devices. Xbox done fine. PlayStation 3 done fine.
But the great thing about gaming on Xbox or PlayStation 3 is that it's one thing. You pick a disc, you know it's going to work. Yeah. Steam is already talking about having three tiers of hardware to deliver, and you're thinking, you're introducing a level of complexity that you just don't need. So what's the thing? It's exciting.
And yet, this is all downloaded. The nice thing about Steam, you buy it, you can play it on your PC, and you can play it on your home.
It's a tied to your account. Your device.
I've already bought a lot of games via it. I mean, I love Steam, and I think it's a big, I don't know how many members of Steam has, but that's a big player in the PC market. Bringing it to the home theater might be a different...
And, you know, it's interesting because they weren't the only ones announcing kind of a Steam partnership. I mean, NVIDIA, if you went to NVIDIA press conference, they unveiled Project Shield, which was this basically an Android handheld gaming device powered by the new Tegra 4 chip.
Right.
Now, ho-hum, Android gaming, neither here nor there. But what was interesting is that they showed off a functionality that allowed you to stream from your gaming PC through the device to your TV using the controller, Steam Big Picture. So any game that would run off your gaming PC, whether it requires the GPU or whatever, could be streamed like OnLive does or did.
Right. Look how well that worked out.
Well, but this is locally. This is over your home network. So you don't need to move your gaming PC anywhere. As long as it's plugged into the network, you can run it to your TV no matter where it's at.
I think that was actually the big story in gaming, and it was really centered around the NVIDIA booth and the NVIDIA grid. It's a concept that we've been using in enterprise for a while, the idea of massively distributed power. You could have these huge racks of servers. In their case, they're using the GPUs to do a lot of calculations incredibly quickly. And rather than having games for this platform and games for that platform, you have the game, which can then be run to basically any device you have, which I think it kind of takes away the importance from really powerful miniature computers when I can now have a tablet or a desktop or a laptop or a Chromebook all have the same gaming experience because all the hard processing is being done upstream somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest obstacle has always been latency, right?
Connectivity.
When you do something on the controller, you don't want it to wait even a couple of milliseconds. You want it.
That's what killed OnLive, I believe. Yeah.
But that's when I think what you're talking about, being able to do that within your own network. So you've got the grid for when you have access to the internet. But if you're only within your house, you can use the exact same technology, the exact same licensing to run a really high-performance game off your PC but on your television.
I don't know that people – I mean, again, I'm coming back. One of my other themes of CES is like the increasing de-PC-ification of PCs and IT and technology, right? We've seen last quarter – I think there was an NPD thing came out last week, which is the first holiday quarter that PC sales have declined. And we're seeing people buying tablets.
I think
tablets.
You got to blame Windows 8 for that.
People buying tablets, people buying iPods, people buying stuff to do their computing on that are not PCs. And the idea of streaming something from a PC to another device implies that you can have the PC in the first place. And I think looking out, 18, 24, 36, 48 months, we're just going to see PC sales continue to nosedive in favor of tablets.
I mean, if you think about the beginning of that was essentially when people started picking up laptops over desktop PCs because it's a turnkey solution. Your display is connected. Yeah. You don't need to plug anything in.
It's convenience over power.
Exactly. And, You know, it's, I think it's like home networking. A lot of devices have become PC-ified, if that's a correct term, and becoming more appliances. Yeah. So why couldn't you have what used to take up a huge server case and just put it into a giant box that you stick in the corner, plug in one cord for power and, you know, wirelessly connect and have it do the same thing?
Dr. Morbius in the chat room says, well, you can't play Half-Life 3 on an iPad, though, can you? Which, of course, you can't play Half-Life 3 on anything at the moment.
You could, actually, you
how
could
long have
play,
we been waiting for that?
You could play Half-Life 3 if the processing was not being done locally.
Well, you know,
could
well, that was the online premise, on live premise, and I think that that's... I've never
that's
bought it.
That's surely debunked by now, right?
No, I actually having used online, it wasn't a bad experience.
Are you buying the hype?
What?
I used it. It wasn't noticeable. No, even a millisecond or two is too much, right?
The thing that I think really kind of struck on live was just they couldn't carry any kind of first-tier games. They carried games that were out 6 months after they've been released on everything else, so why would you? Rent a game for Xbox or PS3 or Wii U off GameFly, get in the mail, finish it up in a month, and then send it back.
There were also issues of the economy of these the server side, because you have to build up enough server capacity to handle a huge crowd, and they said they never had more than 1,500 people using
it. What killed them was scale.
They couldn't scale.
Because they had to build out their own infrastructure. Right. But here's the difference. Here's the difference between when online started and right now, and that is I can actually buy computing power from a colo somewhere.
Right. Right.
I don't have to build anything.
EC2.
I can do it on demand. I can say, well, I'm going to have from this much to this much needed at any time of the day, and you're only going to charge me.
Amazon's
for as
Elastic
as I use.
Computing, and then, of course, Microsoft and Rackspace and others are doing this too, really does change the equation.
Yes, it does.
It's computing power on demand. Mm-hmm. I don't know why OnLive didn't use that.
Because
of
the latency. Because Amazon
was too far away.
Because Amazon's software stack is going to be configured to delivering web services, not gaming, and the whole latency equation.
You need to optimize for latency.
But imagine if you lived in one of Google's super high bandwidth cities like Kansas City, where suddenly you have a super fast connection and access to racks and racks of servers.
Dream on.
If I lived in Google's super fast fiber network, there'd be no bandwidth left for anybody else.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Let's take a break. When we come back, a warning from the Department of Homeland Security not to use Java. we use Java, the terrorists win. I just want to say.
Yeah, you know your software stack is bad when DHS is coming after you.
Maybe you better not use that Java thing. First, a word from our friends at Citrix, who actually this does run on Java. I should point out, but it does it in a very safe and sane way because you're not getting you're getting it from GoToMeeting. The folks at Citrix really know what they do. One of the reasons they use Java is because it means they can work on anything. Actually, you know, maybe it does it because now it works on the iPhone and the iPad, which don't support Java. It works on Android devices. GoToMeeting allows you to hold meetings pretty much anywhere. And nowadays, that kind of convenience and flexibility is huge. This is what the promise of the digital generation was all about, being able to leave work early, being able to work from anywhere, seeing clients and colleagues in full, high-definition, crystal-clear video. It is amazing. That's the HD faces. You can be more productive. You can work smarter. You'll spend less time at the office. When you're traveling, you know, you whip out your iPhone, your iPad. You can even present from an iPad now, which is great. It'll use the camera on the iPad so they could see you. You could see them wherever you are, whenever you need to. I want you to try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Is it GoToMeet? I think it uses Java. I'm pretty sure. Maybe I misspoke. GoToMeeting.com. I think it does. Click the try it free button. Use the promo code TWIT. That's GoToMeeting.com. Click the try it free button. Promo code TWIT. Very easy to throw a meeting, to hold a meeting. Very easy to join a meeting, and no matter where you are. GoToMeeting.com. Give it a try today. Use the offer code TWIT for 30 days free. The difference is you're downloading a Java app. I mean, Minecraft uses Java. But that's fine because you're using an app that you've downloaded and you're going to run it in its Java. What the problem is, and what the Department of Homeland Security is warning people about, is Java in your browser. Apparently, another zero-day exploit in Java 7, the latest version of Java, that means that a hacker can take over your system.
Are you sure DHS isn't just worried about the vast amount of man hours being wasted in Minecraft?
It could be. They say you. This is great. They say not to uninstall it, but merely to go into your browser. And we've been Steve Gibbons has been saying this on Security Now for ages. And disable browser Java. Now, the good news, if you're using Chrome or Safari, at least, and I don't know how Firefox and IE do it, it will say before it runs Java, it will say, hey, this site wants to run Java on your machine. Is that okay? And you have to say allow explicitly. Of course, a lot of people probably just go, whatever.
Whatever.
Yeah, sure, go ahead. But there is a weakness in Java 7 that could allow the installation of arbitrary software on a machine. The DHS says... there's attacks happening right now in the wild, and they're advising you to disable Java in your browser. It's kind of complicated to do in Google Chrome, but the good news is in Chrome, it warns you anyway. So I guess the advice to our viewers who are smart and sophisticated is when you get warned that Java is about to run, you might want to think about what, from whom, and why. And if you're playing Minecraft, that's okay. If you're doing GoToMeeting, that's okay. But you might not want to do it on Hacker.com.
all those guys at Hacker.com, yeah, they're always on it.
Yeah, they're bad. And I don't – Internet Explorer, I think, does not warn you too much about what's going on. And Oracle's response is, yeah, we're going to update Java.
When we feel again. Like it.
Yeah. Alex Jones says this is overreaction. The king of overreaction.
Is that the same Alex Piers Morgan Alex Jones?
Yeah.
Psycho oh, wow. Alex Jones?
The king of overreaction says...
This is overreaction.
This is overreaction.
Wow. Well, I definitely take that guy seriously.
I Homeland Security actually is getting more and more involved in cybersecurity. This is not the first time they've given us a warning about things not to do. There's also updates for Flash and Adobe Reader. Problems there as well. You know, you just turn all that crap off.
Yes. I would think DHS should be more worried about Eric Schmidt going to North Korea. I mean, what
Why?
Is that all about?
That's like what? Jane Fonda riding in a tank. What's the what could possibly go wrong? What could possibly go wrong? So it was a humanitarian mission. He's not lending aid and comfort to the enemy.
No. I just think it was a bit... It just looked a bit strange, didn't it?
Certainly the U.S. government was very unhappy about it.
I mean, what was he... what did he officially announce his intention?
So Google, the headline in the WSJ is Google Schmidt presses North Korea on web barriers. He told North Korean officials must drop barriers to global internet access
Kim
if they hope
Il
to Jong develop.
Tear this wall down. Actually, it's Kim. It's
Kim
what
Jong-un.
Is
this?
Kim
Jong-un.
Jong-un. Tear this...
Well, you know what? To be honest, North Korea, I think, has a lot more pressing issues than access at this point.
In a country where most of the people don't have power the full day, I think internet access might be kind of low on the priority list.
Also, I'm just going to say that he wore the most bizarre sweater I've ever seen a man wear.
Okay, don't go to Korea in a sweater vest.
Don't go to Korea in... I mean, it's just...
It's pink.
Obnoxious.
Maybe...
Susan B. Komen or G. Komen?
There's really no excuse for that sweater.
It's just breast cancer awareness sweater vest. You are such a sad man.
That's outrageous.
I like the spread collar. That's very British, but I don't understand the pink sweater. And it really is pink.
Salmon. It's not even salmon.
And so it's this very bizarre two-pronged attack where he brings former New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson, well-known for his work in North Korea, to say that Pyongyang should temper its nuclear development efforts and advance internet development efforts.
I think it's reasonable for the State Department to say, we don't think private citizens should be wandering to North Korea. And asking them to, stop doing anything.
They probably don't want to be responsible for rescuing him somehow in, a month.
There's a picture. I don't know. Is that Richardson?
Yeah.
That's
interesting that he should say that. Thing is,
he looks like he should be running across the stage with bombers.
Chasing a cake.
Oh, Keith in the chat room says just to keep him away from I'm a Dinner Jacket, which is a twit throwback from many moons ago.
Oh, my gosh.
He
totally looks lost. It's like, where am I? I got on a bus for Vegas and ended up here.
By the way, Google implied that Schmidt's not doing this on our
on their dime
either.
And so he just got bored.
Is that a public disavowal of Eric Schmidt from Google? It's like, we don't know he's there. We didn't send him.
Who knows what Eric does?
Maybe they decided to put a new node out there somewhere in the hinterlands.
That guy.
He's always been kind of a character.
Maybe he wants to have Google Glasses manufactured in North Korea.
Yeah.
Have very competitive labor rates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, I am still waiting for my Google Glasses.
Yeah, I'm number 737. I don't know. Where it was supposedly, the Pebble Watch is coming out. I'm going to get mine in a couple of weeks.
Pebble Watch, the IM Watch, they were both at CES.
I had the IM Watch. Terrible.
It was horrible.
Couldn't figure out how to use it.
Press conference at CES, and they told the journalists, if you come to the press conference, we will give you an IM Watch.
Yeah.
And so it packed the room.
Yeah.
It was one of those. It was supposed to be 15 minutes. It went an hour and 15. Nice. And then they told everyone, well, we don't have the watches here. Oh. You all have to come to the booth, and we're going to do a sit down with you and guide you through all the features and how you should review it. And so half the people just took off.
I reviewed it and was not impressed at all. It was very difficult to connect to the phone. And I'm, you know, the only nice thing about the Pebble Watch is it is e-ink. So even if it doesn't work, it'll be an interesting watch.
It's like that sundial watch that was so popular.
Right. January 23rd.
I look at it and it looks lovely. I don't get how much, like, the whole idea of it pinging you when you've got, like, a new email or something.
Right.
Is it more work to, like, roll your sleeve up and look at your watch than it is just to pull your phone out of your pocket?
No.
I don't see it as a time saver. And I saw somebody saying,
it's not a time saver. It's a fashion statement.
Is it really a fashion statement?
It is the most funded Kickstarter project of all time. More than $10 million in pledges, surpassing its initial goal over 100 times.
People
obviously
want
interested.
It, right? But I just don't get why.
Well, it's programmable. It's
cool. Cool doesn't need to have a reason. Mm.
That is absolutely true.
Sometimes I wonder, you know, everybody, Apple pretty clearly, certainly Google, Pebble, is starting to think about wearable computing, right? Google with the glasses. I bet you Apple's going to do something next year.
What would they do?
They took that Nano off. I think they're going to make another watch.
Make a Nano watch.
Yeah. Because they need a new product category. They need somewhere to grow. They're done with the hyper growth.
Yeah, that's going to really shut up the critics about having no innovation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, we got a watch. I'll tell you what the next Apple product should be. I know. It should be an iPhone and an iPad mini. I'm tired of these little tiny phones.
I want a Galaxy iPhone.
Are
you on a phablet?
I want an iPhone in a mini, because then I only can carry one device. The mini's a nice, small enough for a tablet. Maybe it's a little bigger than an average phone.
Hello?
No, you don't do that, though. Nobody really talks on a phone anymore. Do you?
I talk on my phone all the time.
What kind of phone do you have?
iPhone 5.
Yeah. I have the Galaxy Note 2. It looks kind of dorky if you talk on your phone.
You know, a year ago at CES,
just about acceptable.
When they released the Note, every member of the tech press was saying, oh, it's too big. No one will ever buy it.
Now everyone wants it.
Is that 4?
5.5 inches.
That's 5.5, because there were quite a lot of 5.5s at CES.
That's the hot
category. So Lenovo had the new 5.5. Yeah,
right. 1080p.
Which is the new hot category of phone.
Yeah. I'm telling you, Apple's going to do it this year. iPad mini with an iPhone in it. And everybody's going to go, brilliant idea. I just want you to remember.
You heard it here.
The same guy who came up with Dig 4. iPad mini phone. And their slogan will be iPad phone home. I'm not kidding. You watch.
Ken from Chicago mentioned that Huawei had a 6-inch phone. And yes, they did, but also, and I have a great picture of this, if you passed by their booth for about 2 days on that huge screen, they had their version of Windows and it had an error dialog box.
Nice.
I guess that no one had access to the room where you had to clear the error.
That's embarrassing.
It was all in Mandarin. I couldn't read it.
But really
right in the center, it looked like that OK dialog box.
Oh, my God.
A little sad.
You both at the party.
Yeah, that's not impressive. I like that Chad's got the Windows 95 now on the back.
It's good. We're booting it up. Woo-hoo. It's going to take a while. It'll be booted up by the end of the show, I'm sure.
Oh, I have the connector that you're going to want, Leo.
What's that?
So this is from Energy. This is
Energy. I like Energy stuff. They make batteries that you could charge your phones with and stuff.
This is a 6.8 milliamp hour battery. So this could charge your iPhone 4.5 times over.
Cool.
It can charge up to 2 iPads at the same time. So it will do 10 watts.
10 watts. Wow.
But it also has this. This is a little cable that they created that each breakout has a different connector.
Yeah.
And so they're going to put the
lightning. You know what connector it doesn't have on it?
The lightning.
Yeah, you know why?
I know. But they said they shipped that to me.
They said they're going to do it.
They're going to do it as soon as
actually,
it's ready.
I think Dick DiBartolo mentioned this on the GizWiz. So the idea is you've got a 30-pin cable, you've got micro USB, and you've got mini USB all on the single cable, which is kind of a cool idea. But the problem is, and Apple really kind of screwed everybody on this, Lightning, and Lightning is proprietary, expensive because it has a protection chip built into it. And so far, they've kind of shown some reluctance to license it. There was a Kickstarter project of a all-in-one battery that had a Lightning on it, or didn't have, but they wanted it to. Apple at first said no, and apparently they've backtracked on that. So maybe...
But it's nice, it's neat, it's clean. It's three connectors front to back, almost like a digital centipede.
This is what we've come to. This is like the hot product of CES.
It's the most unassuming that tends to be the most successful.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah, I have to say, for me, the thing about looking at all these kind of things and thinking about the Lenovo and new categories of Note and things is that this year for me, CES really felt like the first year that other consumer electronics companies really caught up to Apple. I seem to remember last year's CES really being lots of also-ran tablets. Like lots and everyone scrambling after the iPad.
And for the last 3 or 4 years, the big story at CES was always Apple.
Apple, somewhere else.
They're releasing an iPad. They're releasing the iPhone 4, iPhone 5. And that was always the talk of CES, not this year. Nobody
talking
about Apple.
But this year it actually feels like just looking at Padre's new Acer notebook, which is
gorgeous.
That's
a pretty notebook, yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely
gorgeous.
Yeah, because
it's a MacBook Air clone.
But lots of people have done MacBook Air clones in the past, and they've not been any good.
Right.
Whereas this is not only a MacBook Air clone, but has the touch screen on it as well, which I didn't think I was going to like, but actually I really do like.
I do like the idea of touch. I think that Apple should be doing it. But I have to say, I'm not saying Apple is still the king of the hill. I think there's not much innovation coming out of them either. I think we're just in this
not
stagnant.
At the moment.
We're in this stagnant period.
I think there needs to be another. I mean, innovation never is a linear line.
Right.
It always
you
goes
get plateaus
in spikes.
And yeah.
I mean, there just needs to be another right. one thing.
I think that's where we sit.
A new spark that kicks off another round.
Yeah, I think that's where
round.
We sit right now.
Well, I mean, you look at something like Lenovo. Lenovo had the Horizon, which is that 27-inch
That thing is
tablet.
Pretty sweet.
Tablet. It's a tablet. It's 27 inches.
What's a PC? So it's more than a tablet.
It's a PC, but it's battery-powered, but it comes on a cart, and it's... obviously designed to be used like a tablet.
Who wants
table.
That? It's
exactly. Who wants it? But maybe someone
you
does.
Know, if you can make it. No,
that's exactly what they said at the board meeting when the guy,
maybe,
but
maybe
someone
does.
Well, Panasonic had a 20-inch tablet that was 4K.
Yeah, 4K, I heard about that. I didn't
it was,
see it. Did
like,
you see
to
it?
Sit on a desktop. Looked gorgeous.
Gorgeous. See, one of the things a lot of people have said, they poo-pooed the idea of 4K because they say, oh, no, you need a giant screen to see the difference or you need to sit very close. And I disagree. I think surprisingly, and you'd only know when you see it, 4K, even on a small screen, actually is noticeably different. I'm not sure why. It's not like your eyes are...
Well, it's like having a Retina on your iPad.
Yeah,
like
I think it makes a
difference. If you took that same approach, you would never have a high-resolution iPad.
Well, even a 33 or a 42-inch screen looks good in 4K.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a bigger screen looks even better. They had an 8K display. That made me a little queasy. Did you see? I think it was a Sony's booth.
I did not...
It was you were looking at a train, first from the top down, a switching yard, and then the close-up, and it was too real.
Wow.
It was really
incredibly
real. And that's part of the Ultra HD spec is both 4 and 8K. So I also asked people about whether we're going to get content in 4K. And a lot of people, I was surprised, said, yeah, no, don't worry about it. There will be. And Netflix did a 4K streaming demo that they did, I think, with Sharp or LG. No, really?
Wow.
I don't know who has that bandwidth yet.
Well, I was going to say, you're going to run through your bandwidth cap in about half a minute.
Which is why you need Corning's new advancement, which is all fiber.
Gorilla Glass 3?
It's using Gorilla Glass technology. It's deep, it's deep ion exchange fiber, so you could loop it, you can tie it in a knot.
Wow.
So you could actually use it in a consumer environment.
That's cool.
And it's got a crazy amount of bandwidth.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll just all go fiber.
Go all fiber.
Wow.
Maybe we'll just replace Windows with 4K 8K displays.
We don't have to look out the window.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had that at the higher booth.
Oh, and it's raining. I want to look at something prettier. Yeah.
They had a window that had a display that would just come in.
It looks very real, does it not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
TV's Egon wants the 64K screen. Let's stop messing around.
Yeah. I think, somebody's put in the chat room earlier that CES is sort of fast becoming the conceptual electronics show, which I actually agree with.
I don't mind that.
It's stuff that we're going to see in 5 years.
That doesn't bother me so much. I don't mind that. If there were interesting conceptions But I just didn't. A lot of this stuff was just like, come on. Come on. Did you see that Microsoft? I almost don't want to even. Microsoft Silicon Valley office was raided, but they didn't steal any Windows machines. They just stole the iPads. That was over the Christmas holidays. Only Apple products were stolen.
It's probably easier to hawk.
Thieves stole more than $3,000 worth of iPads, five iPads. Microsoft had smartphones, Surface tablets, untouched.
They had 14 million unsold Surface tablets in the back.
Nobody's touching them.
Are they going to be given discounts on those anytime soon?
Surface is not selling like crazy, is it? Yeah. Have you played with a Surface?
I have.
Well, I bought one.
It's fine. I'm just not a big tablet guy. But if the price is right, I could be.
I saw my first one in the wild.
What do you think? I noticed you have an iPad in front of you.
I mean, I've seen one before, but I've never seen anybody else using one.
I have never seen anyone using one.
I saw somebody, a guy at an airport, and he was sat next to...
Did he look depressed?
He didn't look that happy, I'm going to say. I don't know whether that was like his flight was delayed or what, but he was sat and he had the tablet out on the kickstand on his lap, and I was like, Surface.
And by the way, that is not a felicitous arrangement.
No.
The tablet kickstand on your lap?
No.
It's very wobbly.
It's not ideal. It's kind of... Crotch-tastic.
Lou MM in the chat room, who does work for Microsoft.
He made
an interesting point. He said it was a developer's office, and in developer's office, really the only mobile devices they have are the iPads because they develop on locked down desktops. They're actually bolted to the building.
I'm not going to say you're wrong, Lou. I'm just saying that the reporter from the Guardian reported it, but the San Jose reporter tweeted, no, it's true, and there were Surfaces there, and they weren't. Let me find the tweet.
Although Curtis B says that they wouldn't have had this problem if they were using 27-inch tablets, right. You could carry that thing out the door.
Palo Alto Daily Post reporter Angela Ruggiero, who had the story, confirmed it. She said, "So to everyone out there asking, yes, the story is very real. there were smartphones." And tablets. I don't think they were locked down, Lou. I don't know. Maybe she missed the locks. I don't know why they'd lock those down and not lock down their iPads. Messenger's going to be retired March 15th. I know in Canada, MSN Messenger was huge. Was it big in England?
It was huge.
Not anymore.
No.
Nobody
uses it. Facebook.
Nobody does IM anyway.
Yeah. Well, IM. A lot of people do IM, but they do Facebook Messenger.
Facebook Messenger.
Or they use like the equivalent of iChat or BBM.
Right. What do you use?
I use mostly GChat. And I still use AIM because I have a bunch of...
AIM people. That's the
AIM
key.
People. AIM?
Yeah, because there's just a bunch of people. There's literally like 20 people that I still keep in touch with. That's the only reason why I still use
it. But only have AIM?
Well, it's the only account I know for them.
Nick with a C says it was huge in the UK until MySpace came along. That really killed MSN Messenger.
Well, that worked out well, didn't it? I think the new use case for instant messenger for most people now is mobile.
I just think it's interesting. I mean, they're literally turning off the server March 15th. So it's not done.
Even legacy support?
Not even legacy support. It's gone. But what they're hoping people will do is move to Skype.
Skype's awful.
I was talking with Mary Jo Foley. And she said Microsoft even admitted this. The whole strategy is to get people to have Skype launch when they turn on their computer and leave it running all day. So that Skype really... The idea eventually is it becomes your phone. This is Microsoft's kind of stealth wedge into telephony.
27-inch phone.
Now you're talking.
I'd leave it on my phone if I wanted.
Come on, don't you want a phone on your iPad mini?
Oh, I know.
Admit it.
I know the perfect wallpaper would be like a boombox.
Sir, in the front row, sir, you want a phone on that, don't you? Yeah. Wouldn't that be great? I'm telling you, it's the hot product
from
Apple.
That's the next thing.
You heard it here first.
Perfect.
Then you don't have to carry a phone around. You got everything you need right there. You got apps? Oh, yeah. Well, you could put Skype or Tango or Voxer
native,
and stuff.
You want it
to be an AT&T cell phone or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, he's one of them.
That's what I would get.
He's a data phone caller.
Because I want to, thinking about the watch thing, because I always want to have my phone in my pocket to make a call easily.
Well, now you're going to do
this. If I had the tablet in my man bag, I could have my watch like a little...
That's what I'm saying.
I should do the keypad on here and have the little Bluetooth earset and the and the laptop can stay in the mouse.
The IM Watch has a wired headset that comes from the watch into your ear. Yeah.
How very Dick Tracy.
It's not good.
That's not ideal.
Do you have a merce? A man bag?
A man bag. Oh, yeah.
A male purse?
I have.
Wait, is it an actual merce or is it just a... No,
it is a Burberry tote.
Oh, that doesn't count. That's like a shopping bag.
Yeah.
Oh.
A man bag would be something like a little bit smaller, a little...
Well, I have that looks like a purse.
Looks like a purse.
Yeah, I have a little Mulberry over-the-shoulder thing as well.
Wait,
but this is my carry-everything-everywhere kind of purse.
You know, just slightly larger would be a messenger bag.
Yes.
And then you would be a real man.
The great thing about this one is that it just goes over
you
the shoulder.
You could do like Patrick Norton and have a 40-pound pack on it all the time.
Yes, yeah, two. Like
two. You can see him coming. Forward and backward. He's got giant. He's like...
Because, geez, you need more help peddler. Finding Patrick Wilson,
it's
right?
Like a peddler.
He doesn't stand out enough.
I saw him coming. Like I said, we saw you at CES in the lunch line. I saw him coming a mile away. His pack precedes him.
It's actually his walk. He has a very distinctive walk because he's carried such heavy
loads. Why does he do that? Why does he carry? He's carrying like 100 pounds.
I think he believes that one of those devices in the back will come in useful.
One day it will save his life. That's what's happening. N2 right. Tech says, I can feel the testosterone draining from that. There is nothing more manly than a man bag. That's clues in the
you
name.
Know, it's kind of exercise. You know, it's like wearing weights when you go walking.
Yeah.
Except it's on
or
your
or a
back
shake weight.
And it's like...
Yeah.
Okay.
Shake weight?
I can't see a shake weight without thinking of South Park.
Now you got me thinking about it.
I just
want
to skip of that.
There was a little.
I honestly didn't think that was a real product when I first saw it.
I know.
Oh, it is a real product.
I thought it was a parody. It's like, really?
Oh, no.
I was watching it at LAX.
You can't make this stuff up.
The chat room says that thing that Patrick's carrying, isn't it one of his children?
No, that's up here. That's the third. That's the second
head. That's
the
third head. The second head. He also carries two car batteries in case.
He actually used to. He kept it in his truck for a while.
Yeah.
He carried his truck. What?
He carried two extra deep cycle batteries.
But that's from his Baja experience. He always carry extra stuff.
It's just Patrick. Always been the character. And then he wears a kilt.
Actually, I haven't seen him one.
He hasn't done the kilt lately.
Wear one lately.
He's grown out of the kilt. Hey, you know what you missed? Do we have a best of? Yeah. Do you know what you missed? And then do we have? By the way, I'm just questioning. Is Tom Merritt going to do the week ahead? Wow. Well, I'll tell you what, let's do the week ahead, and then we'll see what you missed if you missed this week.
Hey, thanks, Leo. As you can see, I'm still putting things together down here in Los Angeles. But in the week ahead, I'll be back in Petaluma for a few shows, so I'm looking forward to seeing you then. Other stories we'll be keeping an eye on in the week ahead. Facebook holding a press event on Tuesday, January 15th. Also on Tuesday, Disney to unveil a new gaming initiative called Infinity. Wednesday, January 16th sees eBay's earnings call, and Thursday, January 17th, sees Intel earnings. Those are a few things we'll be keeping an eye on in the week ahead on Tech News Today. Back to you, Leo.
This is Twit. Frame rate.
It's so weird because I go to my parents' place. My parents never watch anything time shifted. It's always some cable news station on there and sports at any given time. Or the Hallmark Channel playing that, whatever that show with Tom Selleck is, with the alcoholic and the dog.
Know how.
Every week on Twitter, I put up a question. If you follow me, it's at Iaz. That's my name. Here's the question. What program do you use to find tags and arts to clean up your music library?
Security Now.
So speaking of same old, we have Adobe, who simultaneously issued security fixes for all of their things also, Acrobat, Reader, and the Flash Player plugin. And I write in my notes here, I just put blah, blah, blah. Just to say, just go and update yourself.
Ditto. Ditto, ditto, ditto.
This Week in Google.
Buy some candy, scan your wristband, you know, anything like that. You just go ahead.
What's really cool about it is that with permission, the data will be in there. So when you go up to Sleeping Beauty, Leo, which I know you will,
mm-hmm.
She'll say, oh, Leo, I have to do an agent.
No. Finally.
Twit. Test drive one today.
That's the voice. People were asking in the chat room. The voice is the great Jim Cutler, voiceover expert extraordinaire.
Skateboarders.
Oh, wait, that's from Night from the Roxbury? Oh, no, that's the SNL skit.
For those who are not watching today, probably best not to. This portion of the show, by the way, what do you think Facebook is going to announce this on Tuesday? What is that all about?
That's the Facebook phone, surely.
Mobile. There's got to be some sort of mobile announcement.
No Facebook phone in the future. Really?
Facebook Land? Theme park?
Ooh. You get to meet all your friends in person.
Actually, it follows the stock price. It goes way up and then just takes a sharp dive.
That's a roller coaster.
Facebook. The Facebook stock price roller coaster.
Maybe they're announcing that Zuckerberg's price to message has gone up to $200.
Actually, I hear Zuckerberg's going to North Korea.
He's going to try to friend the leader. The dear leader.
So it's January 15th at Menlo Park. The invite says, come see what we're building. So it's very generic.
It's a theme park.
I don't think it's a phone. They've denied it over and over again. Wouldn't that be ironic, though, if after denying it nonstop, they just say, oh, by the way, we lied?
Well, he did learn a lot from Steve Jobs, right?
Yeah.
Misdirection.
Maybe they'll just come out with a book.
It's just going to be. Did you see that Mark's charging? If you want to get an email to Mark Zuckerberg, he'll charge you $100 and he'll read it.
What?
So Facebook has a...
Hey, wait a minute.
He's selling for cheap now.
Wait, so if I'm the IRS, can I just like...
Well it's not everybody.
Yeah.
So Facebook is kind of fooling around with a feature that will... they did this before. If you pay $7, right, you get to... You can guarantee that your status update will appear on people's timelines.
Yeah. So number one, it's about allowing companies to get hold of users and make sure that their messages are really being seen.
Right.
But it's also about allowing people to connect with people in a really sort of emphatic way. So if I was holding an event, for example, that I really wanted my friends to definitely know they were invited to, I could pay $7 and have it pinned to the top of their wall so that when they next logged into Facebook, they could say, hey, Will's got this event and he really, really, really wants you to come to it.
Or you could just call them like a normal person and say, are you coming?
So not everybody gets this, but this is a screen cap that Mashable got. New message to Mark Zuckerberg. It says, you aren't connected to Mark on Facebook, so your message would normally get filtered to his other folder. You can send this message to his inbox for $100 or just send this message to his other folder. And then there's a big button that says, send to inbox for $100.
That is so disturbing on so many levels.
Well, you know he's been hard up for cash.
It seems low.
I was going to say
that's
surely,
charge more.
That's
personally.
Surely the best angel investment $100 you could possibly spend.
No, that's
right?
The best spam filter ever.
$100.
You know what? That would be brilliant. What if you charged every time someone wanted to email you, you just charged 50 cents?
Now,
wouldn't that reduce the amount of email you got and really
like
down to people
postage.
That really wanted to get to you?
The strange thing is you only get it if you're not one of his 16 million followers. So nobody who's going to pay $100 is going to get this. Revenue sharing. Huh? Revenue sharing. Rev share.
You pay me $100, but I give some of that money, like
60%
of the money.
It should be, but I don't think there's any rev share involved here.
I don't think they're
going
to do that.
I think a member of our live studio audience is suggesting, how would that work? So I pay $100, who gets the rev share?
So Facebook,
my friend?
Facebook gets... So if I want to email you...
Facebook gets 30
I pay
bucks.
$100.
Facebook gets
Facebook
30.
Gets 30
and Mark
and
gets
70.
Well, I hope Mark gets some.
Why?
He doesn't need it.
Because you mean Facebook gets the whole $100? No, let's say it's not the founder of Facebook. Let's say it's Steve Ballmer.
Another person who's hard up for cash.
Would you?
Let's pick someone else. Let's say
it's
me.
You, Will Harris. You'd get some of it and Facebook would get some of it. Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
But yeah. I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think if
you
someone
think Facebook
pays
gets all of it.
I think if someone pays $100 to email me, Facebook takes $100 to facilitate it.
Oh, that's evil.
Well, it's like LinkedIn. So if you pay for a premium feature on LinkedIn where you can email anybody even if you're not connected to them, you're paying LinkedIn. LinkedIn doesn't give a rev share to the person you're trying to connect to.
It's just because you're important and need to be connected.
Well, they've been doing this much. They already did it for a buck.
Yeah.
Right?
And people did it for a buck?
Well, yeah, a buck's cheap.
Oh.
But see,
just send me a buck.
Yeah, and don't do it to me because I don't read anything.
As
how
we
many,
discovered.
How many? What was in my inbox? 49,000?
Wait. So you're going to send 100? Couldn't you just hire one of those singing telegrams for far cheaper?
And a stripper.
He'll definitely
stripper.
Notice it.
To get him a stripper. Are you Mark Zuckerberg? I have a message for you. Wait a minute, let me open my man.
You have
bag.
A dental appointment next week.
Is this Leona coming back again?
Leona's. What the hell? Has this turned into a morning zoo all of a sudden? Chad, what are you doing, Chad? What is
toilet
that?
Flush.
That was the strippergram.
Oh, okay.
That's $100. You know, you could get a singing telegram. It'd be so much more useful. And it would be more indelible. Someone would remember the the balloons and the dancing.
I don't know if you want them to associate that memory with you or
as opposed to the schmuck who gave $100 over Facebook to send a message.
Yeah. Was that the drop, Chad? That was the drop.
Wait for the drop.
That was chat realmers sending in suggestions for videos in the background.
Oh, that's always fun. Yeah, that's always
it's Metroid
fun.
Right now. It was Super Mario Brothers.
Venture Beat says it will be a phone. I don't think so.
I want it to be a theme park.
I love the theme park. What else would you have if you had
a Facebook theme park? Games that are on Facebook, like right. Farmville.
Farmville.
You'd get to send your thing.
And you would get, like, instead of getting money, you would get, like, you know, those paper tokens or things from a carnival, and you could turn them in for prizes.
So you have a poking room.
It's a theme park just poking filled room. With farms and mobsters just roaming around.
Poking room. I like that.
Uh-oh.
Mm. Mm. Zuckerland.
Zuckerland.
You've been zuckered.
And just random pokes at any time.
Yeah.
$50 a poke?
Whoa, not That's that good kind value. Of poke.
Our show today brought to you by our friends at Carbonite.com. Online backup done right, Mac or PC. If you need to get it back, you need to get Carbonite. Carbonite backup solves the big problem of backing up. First of all, it's got to be automatic, right? Because if you have to remember it, you're not going to do it. You could have every USB key in the world, and you're still not going to remember to do it, right? It also has to be continuous so that if you make a change to a document, it immediately gets backed up. If it only backs up once a week, what happens on day six and your hard drive crashes, you've lost 6 days worth of work. So automatic, continuous. Now, I would submit it's great to have backups to USB keys if you can find what you're looking for or an external hard drive. But you also should have offsite backup because if the worst happens, a fire, an earthquake, somebody steals all your stuff, you got to be able to get it back, and only offsite's going to solve that. You can encrypt it on the way. Of course, it's automatically encrypted with SSL, but you can even encrypt it privately if you want. Trust no one encryption. Only you have the key. And by the way, one of the things I really like, you can see your data anytime. Just log onto your Carbonite account on any computer, even if you've never used it before, or they have the iPad and smartphone apps. It's $59 a year per computer, less than $5 a month. That's real peace of mind. Go to Carbonite.com. Use our offer code TWIT. You'll get 2 bonus months, 14 months for the price of 12, when you decide to buy. Carbonite.com. Use TWIT as the offer code. You don't need a credit card, just the offer code TWIT. We're big fans of Carbonite. Highly recommended. Highly recommended. All right, last chance. Anything else from CES that you think is just got to mention?
The robots over at the Lenovo.
You know, you told me. I went over there.
And were they gone already?
It's closed.
Oh.
It said closed for private meetings. So what were these robots?
So one was a robotic spider the size of like a VW Beetle that you could drive.
Oh, cool.
The guy developed it. It was a Canadian student. Developed it for Burning Man. And over the years, originally it was gas powered. Now it's completely electric. And the other one was a very large snake called Titan Boa.
And were they driving around the parking lot outside?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah, Veronica got into the spider and was driving it around.
Oh, I've got the video. This is on Techzilla, right? Giant robot spider, CES 2013.
I think they brought that snake to Google I.O. this last year.
It's a pretty cool robot.
Wow.
I mean, it's not really a robot. It's more of a walking contraption.
Oh, my golly. Look at her go. All right, I got to skip the Ford ad.
It's our sponsor.
It's our sponsor, too. It's okay. Here she is, Veronica Belmont.
Reporting from CES.
Can I play this? Do I have your permission?
Yes. Jonathan here at the Lenovo booth. Now, you are the creator of the Mondo Spider Stand Engineering. How did it come about?
All right, I'm skipping ahead because I want to watch her drive it.
Phosphate batteries. It's 100% electric.
Come on, Veronica.
Spares, schools, straightforward. It's like driving a tank.
Go, V. Oh, my God.
I don't want to run you over.
Oh, my God. And you control it, or does he control it?
Oh, no, you control it.
It's a Mac.
Can I take this back to my hotel? That was absolutely
Oh,
amazing.
I want to see more. That's cool.
You drive it like a tank. There's two controls.
Left and right.
Cool. Yeah.
It's like Battlezone.
It's not Felicia.
Yeah, she probably hates it when people think she's Felicia Day, don't they?
I've taken pictures of both of them together.
Yeah. Wow, that's really
neat. We need one of those in the brick
house. Was she good at driving that?
Once you get the hang of it, it's pretty
easy. Yeah, because you pull left to go left, and you.
You just got
to
make sure the feet doesn't step on someone else's foot.
So that was at Burning Man. Wow, that's caused some nightmares.
Wow.
But now it's 100 powered by electric energy, no gas motor.
That's kind of impressive.
And the other thing I thought was kind of cool is pretty pedestrian. But speaking of thumb drives, Kingston was showing off 1 terabyte thumb drive.
I heard about that. That's a lot.
Yes.
And you know how much it costs?
It was like, what is it, $15?
No, $3,000.
$3,000?
Wow.
Well.
I think the thing that I saw that I really liked, although I didn't see it, I just saw some videos of it, was the Audi Batmobile.
I did not see the
Batmobile. I'll take one. What is it?
Which is, so Audi's put in into the its new S7 cars.
Yeah.
And it basically is an autonomous system for parking, but for also coming and meeting you wherever you are. So you can be stood like waiting outside a hotel or waiting at the bottom of a parking lot, press a button, and the car will make its way out of the parking spot, drive its way to where you are, and idle sat right next to you.
Oh, nice.
Wow. Like a little remote whistle for your car.
So it's a self-valet. It's pretty awesome.
Obviously a prototype, right?
Yes, but they said they are going to be bringing it to their next generation of cars. It's definitely not just a concept.
You know, I give a lot of credit to Ford because they kind of introduced the idea of going to CES in the first place and saying we're a consumer electronics device. And now every manufacturer is doing this, which is great. Here's some video from GTSpirit.com. Piloted driving for parking maneuvers in parking garages. Wow. So this car is just going to... Is it legal to? Don't you have to have a human in there, legally?
I'm not sure.
I know they've approved in many states, including here in California.
I guess maybe by the time
Google
you get onto
cars,
the hotel,
but there's a human.
Once you get onto the hotel property, you're on a private
road. You can do anything
you
want. Watch. Okay, so now she's arrived at the hotel. She's getting out of the car, and the car's just going to park itself. Wow.
Chee-chee.
She's using a smartphone app. It looks like.
So if someone. Manages to hack your phone, they got your car.
Do they? Yeah, really. Do they have to have infrastructure in the lot to tell the car where to go? Or it's going to listen to some music. Isn't that cute? Turns on the lights. Good. Not
you know,
that it needs
all they
them.
Need is that little red LED light that goes across the grill.
Yeah.
Like Knight Rider.
Yeah. Wow.
I don't know how comfortable I'd be in walking
she
away
just
from my
walked
car
away.
About the park itself.
Oh, watch out for the... Whoa, it's not... Okay, it's a little shaky. It looks like an 8-year-old is driving it.
I'm just waiting for it to hit someone, and then you got a lawsuit.
Yeah. By the way, they've edited the hell out of this. Probably taken out all the crashes. It's going really slowly. Yeah.
I wonder if they tried entering this into
okay,
the,
this is... At this
in
point...
The DARPA challenge?
Yeah.
Yeah.
At this point, this is totally prototype, right? This is not...
Well, you know, it actually works better in a closed-off environment because it can sense the walls.
Right. Right. And it goes slowly so that it doesn't, you know...
Well, there's a spot. Wait, will it keep circling if there's no available spots?
Yeah, and then the next morning, you get it. Doesn't matter. It didn't park. It just drove the whole time. If they want to test this, they got to get 4 or 5 more doing it.
Yeah.
And then see what happens.
They got to do it during a busy day at the Costco parking lot.
Yeah.
Is there a selection on the smartphone app to make it park like a D-bag and take up 2 spots?
you understand that the cost of an 18-year-old kid to do this in a quarter of the time is less than the cost of the technology.
Yeah.
And just as liable to damage your car.
Right.
Yeah.
They're taking the mouth. The food
I don't know about
out of the
you, but I always keep an 18-year-old kid in my this boot is... for just those kind of circumstances.
This is going to put people out of work.
Yeah, it is. You know,
it's really you. Not.
One of the few, one of the few jobs the American kids can do, and that's it. It's gone.
Yeah, especially that jives with their schedule.
We know that Twitter's making money. Fred Wilson says it is, according to the Guardian. Twitter, UK. Has posted profits of, get ready, £16,500.
Wow.
What's that, about a few million bucks?
£16,000. I don't know.
So
what
like
is
20,
it?
Sorry, that was an exchange.
Like $20,000.
That's a pretty niche.
It's like a million dollars or something?
No,
like
it's nothing. It's nothing.
Well, it's probably one of those things. So there's been lots of controversy in the UK about global companies, particularly internet companies, who have UK subsidiaries which make no money for tax purposes.
Yeah, same in the US.
So I suspect...
It's the Dutch sandwich and the French handover. Whatever they call it. There's a name for
it. Sure about that?
There's a name for it. There is a name for
it. You basically move all the profits to the one arm that's in the least tax.
Yeah. It goes to the Irish. They go to Ireland.
That's got to be the episode title, The Dutch Sandwich.
Yeah. Well, no, actually, we've used it already.
Oh.
Kickstarter had a great year. $320 million pledged, and I still haven't gotten my freaking dice. I did get the Joey bra, and I got a plywood.
Well, we're going to start getting some of those high-profile failures.
The Pebble. I'll get the Pebble. I'm going to get the Pebble. I did buy, I think, an Ouya. That's supposed to come soon. I got, you know, they showed it at CES, the VR helmet. What was that called?
The Oculus?
Yeah, the Oculus Rift.
You pledged to that?
I pledged to that, oh, so I should be getting one of them.
Well, 2013 is going to be the year that you get delivered the stuff that you ordered.
You should come into work one day with everything you've purchased off Kickstarter and just walk in.
The Joey bra doesn't fit.
Yeah.
It's too small.
Oh, we had some fans approach us, Twit fans approach us with something they wanted to give to you. They're starting a Kickstarter for a standing desk. Do you remember? Oh. It was like it was called the Darwin, I think.
Because we had a standing desk guy for Kickstarter successful. Or maybe it was Indiegogo on the Gizwiz. Was this week?
This week.
Must be another one.
Approached Chad and I and said, that's, you know, we love Leo. Could you show him this? And I said yes, and I don't know where I put it.
Father Robert Ballister is the host of This Week in Enterprise Tech, which you can catch each and every Monday. What, noon?
Noon.
Noon Pacific time. 3 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC.
That's right.
On twit.tv. What do you got coming up?
Well, tomorrow we're talking all about, actually, sit-stand. We've got a representative from Ergotron who's going to explain to us why
they
it's a good thing.
They make some nice desks.
Yes, they do.
Will you use an Ergotron on the set?
That's right. The Twiet set is an Ergotron desk. And the info coming back about letting your employees either sit or stand throughout the day, it's unequivocally good. You need to do that. It's good for their health.
Both sit and stand, or just stand?
Sit and stand. So
that's the key, is move up and down.
Exactly.
So Ergotron, in fact, I saw this at Macworld last year, has ones that just do it, you know. Bzzz,
oh, yeah.
Bzzz. I want one of those, but they're expensive. But yeah. I would like one of those. That would be fun. Maybe in the middle of the show, I could press a button and we'd all just stand up.
Just have it randomly go up and down.
That would be great for courts. Instead of telling anyone to all rise.
All rise.
Just raise the table.
Roger Chang, it's so good to see you again.
Yeah, no,
I was
really
pleased to see you at CES, too, with the whole Techzilla gang. Do you have some Techzilla CES specials? What are you doing?
Yes. Well, we did all our Techzilla coverage this past week, but we'll have our Monday wrap-up episode.
So you did it live?
We did not do it live.
Released it already.
Yes.
Got it.
You can find it at revision3.com/Techzilla or youtube.com/TechHD.
TechZilla. Are you working on their new tech feed, the tech feed channel at all?
Yes. I'm doing a show called Downloaded with Jim Lauterbach.
I can't wait. So this is youtube.com/TechFeed.
Yes.
And you're going to do something called the Downloaded.
No, I am doing it.
What is it about?
It's basically a pundit show with two guests, Jim and alcohol.
That's novel.
It's actually pretty fun. We had Dylan Tweeny, and
that's
last
fun.
Week, so it's
well. I'm
great.
Glad Jim's doing a show. That's great.
In between running the company,
yeah, busy guy, and a lot of your coverage is also on that feed, the tech feed. That's the new Revision 3 channel on YouTube.
Yes,
love it, love it. I know Snubs is doing a show with Darren Kitchen of Hack 5 called
The Threat Wire.
And, of course, somebody who's been a pioneer in internet broadcasting from Channel Flip, my old friend Will Harris. How's Channel Flip doing? Are you still there? You sold it.
Oh, yeah.
But you stuck around.
Oh, yeah. So we have just, we're doing all kinds of stuff. We're going nuts. We've just launched a new YouTube channel, which is go to youtube.com/hoo-ha. Of course, that's H-U-H-A.
H-U-U-H-A.
No, H-U-H-A.
H-U-H-A.
The D is silent.
Ha.
And I basically describe it as Adult Swim meets Monty Python.
Oh, awesome.
Lots of funny, stupid.
Monty Swim.
This is impressive.
Or Adult Python.
Brightly colored animated flip-flappery for adults.
Exactly.
Now, how does this work? Do you go out and you hire animators and come up?
So we have lots of animators working and producing all sorts of funny stuff. Do you know a guy called Mr. Weeble? Mr. Weeble produces Weeble and Bob, who is
not.
Very funny.
Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down.
Right. So we have Mr. Weeble as one of our animators, and lots of really great, fun, cool content.
And coming soon.
Everyone should go there and subscribe.
Beef House.
Beef House, which is like the A-Team, but with butchers.
I have too many channels open. I've got Channel Flip open in three different.
It's a mashup.
Mashup
Leo's
cool. Well, I'm so glad to hear that. Channelflip.com or youtube.com/channelflip or youtube.com/hoo-ha. Actually, if you go to any one of them, it will link you back.
You'll get to all of them in the
end. Look at all the channels you have.
We have like 140, I want to say.
Wow.
Wow. Are any of them like the YouTube gives you lots of money and then you just...
Yeah, so Hoo Ha is one of the channels that we created with the YouTube original program.
That's what it's called. Yeah. Really cool. Congratulations. Is that because you got Mr. Weeble? Was that the selling point?
Mr. Weeble was an intrinsic part. The Beef House was an intrinsic part of that Google Can't Get Enough Beef House.
Very cool. We do Twit Sunday afternoons, 3 p.m. Pacific, right after the NFL football. Actually, no.
What are you going to do next week?
I don't know. I'm going to be sick. Next week, we have the playoffs. The Niners will be playing.
Yeah.
Who won?
Seahawks.
No, the Falcons won.
Oh, the Falcons.
Well, that's right. Same time as
Falcons. And then who's winning today? Is it New England winning?
I think New England was beating the snot.
Last I saw it was New England was winning.
Yeah.
So these guys don't care. See, nobody who actually watches this channel could care less. Could care less.
Yeah, that's over.
So, no, we do it 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time.
11 p.m. UTC.
Is it?
Yep.
You know, because you watch.
Because I watch it.
You're on British Standard Time.
Is that the same thing as
BST
UTC?
BST is not the same as US UTC.
So that's like 16
You're off by an hour.
I think I'm off by an hour. Well, it's 11 p.m. UK
It's plus
time.
8 here. So if we're at 1,500, it'd be 2,300. Yeah, it's the same.
Yeah, it is the same.
Yeah. You are in UTC.
We'll leave that one hanging.
Ladies and gentlemen, thanks to Chad Johnson, our producer, who did a yeoman job at CES. We have a lot of CES coverage, twit.tv/specials. I'm very tempted to do an experiment. Last night, the NBC Nightly News covered this Java flaw. And they, without permission, I'm not complaining, used a clip of me explaining it. They just pulled it from our channel. They said, you know, a nationally syndicated tech journalist, Leo Laporte, explained to his listeners how to disable Java, and they show a little clip of me. But what if I play that clip with the surrounding NBC content on this show? Will they pull?
Takedown notice.
I'll get a takedown notice.
Absolutely.
Sure. Doesn't seem right somehow.
You mean a little hypocritical?
Well, I'm not gonna take them down. I think it's great. I'm thrilled. Just as they should be thrilled if I play some of their content on our little production here. I can't. If I had the link, I would do it, but I don't. It's on MSNBC somewhere.
That Brian Williams, he's such a cad.
No, it was it's the Weekend guy.
Oh, nobody knows him.
Actually, anymore. I wanted to show it. Can you find that, Chad? This chat room, do you have a link? Chat room will give you a link. Are you in the chat room? I haven't been able to get in the chat the whole time. I cannot tell you how hard it is to do a show without the chat room. Oh, here it is. It came back. Would you give me a link to that? Here we go.
There you go.
I want to show you because now there's an ad at the beginning, so we won't take it right away. But there's another thing I really liked about it. Television coverage of technology has really improved significantly. For one thing, I thought that they did technically an excellent job of covering this story, which is not an easy story. The difference between the Java and JavaScript and all of that stuff. There he is. Look at that. Wait a minute, stop. We've done this shot. Roger, back me up on this. You always do this shot of a guy typing and then later of a guy mousing. Let's back up a little bit. This is beautiful. It's a wooden keyboard? What the hell? I mean, still have the clickety-clack keys, but I think technology coverage on the networks has improved considerably.
That's
a wooden keyboard.
Web is enough to allow maybe even bamboo.
Okay, now let's watch a little more. Do it full screen. Yeah, you got to have the code. Got to have the word hacker.
Once you gain control of someone's computer remotely, you can do a lot of mischief.
The problem is in Java software, a computer language that runs in the background on millions of devices. Some say it's become a favorite exploit for hackers.
Keyframe overload.
I think it's got to be just stock footage.
Yeah, of course. From what, 1995?
Now, wait, here I come. Oh, more typing. That was a hacker, by the way. He had rings.
Bling equals hacker.
Anyone using browsers for PCs.
And you've also got to have the dark room.
Dark room.
Just lit by the
and they notice they had her mousing.
Dell hasn't made that computer for 10 years.
I know, it's old. It's all stock footage.
In a statement, it is aware of the flaw, but that it's limited to the Java for browsers product, adding a fix will be available shortly. But the U.S. Department of Homeland Security is not waiting. On its website,
I think they actually do a good job disable Java. Explaining this.
The latest security problem is the talk.
That looks like a real office.
Tech journalist Leo Laporte explained what to do on his weekly radio show.
If you go to the settings of your browser, In Safari,
now, I'm not complaining. We got a plug.
Settings.
But they've just captured the screen.
They captured the screen from our Twitch site and all that. More typing. More code. More code going by. More typing. You know, this is, by the way,
it sort of climaxes to this bit where it's like got the typing and the overlay and the code is going down. Well, it's right. Sort of like climactic.
That's all stock footage. We could recreate that, I bet, from just the stuff on
Pond. Now, the chat room's pointing out that they did pick up when I'm talking, I'm rubbing my eyes like I just woke up. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I've got to explain this Java thing.
I'm on the freaking radio. If you close your eyes, I don't sound sleepy. It's just, anyway. So now, let's see. Let's see how long before we get the takedown notice from NBC. I guarantee you.
24 hours.
Not even, probably.
By the time I come in for Twyatt tomorrow,
it'll be down.
There'll be a takedown notice.
Okay, I'm laying down the gauntlet. NBC, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 higher USB keys.
And a camera.
And a little camera if you don't take us down. I didn't mention, actually, the story that worries me the most. And I almost am tempted not to mention this. I'm nervous to mention this. There is a patent troll out there. At least I think they're, I don't know, maybe they're not a patent troll, who claims that they have patented podcasting.
Yeah.
They apparently, I remember this, they sued Apple a little while ago. It's called Personal Audio LLC. And they claim they invented podcasting in 1996. They have a patent which was granted to them last year. And a system for disseminating media content representing episodes in serialized sequence. They sued and beat Apple, got a judgment of $8 million. They've entered licensing agreements now with Sirius, Arcos, Kobe, Rim, Samsung, Amazon, and Motorola. They're now suing two of the biggest podcasters out there, Adam Carolla and How Stuff Works. Now, we asked for a comment from either of them, and both of them, probably at the advice of their lawyers, said we aren't going to talk about this. We're not going to say a word. And I'm a little nervous about that. I would like to say, because I know we'll get a lawsuit next, right? Or Channel Flip.
Somebody will be off.
Somebody. Right? And what I would like to see the internet, the podcast community do is band together and loudly fight this. But so it does make me a little bit nervous. They sue in East Texas because that supposedly is a place that's quite favorable to these patent lawsuits. Personal Audio says they invented this stuff back in 1996 or 95. All I could say is it makes, as somebody who does create content for the internet, this would be a devastating blow if we had to license this stuff. If we got sued by these guys, I don't know if we could even afford to defend ourselves. And we certainly couldn't pay the kind of money that Apple ended up paying. It would put us out of business. And it could put, frankly, podcasting out of business. So I just wanted to raise your awareness about this. Certainly, I think what would happen if we did get sued is we'd come to our audience and ask for your help. We've asked, and I would love to help Adam and How Things Work, but I think they both decided, probably their lawyers have decided it'd be best to just stay quiet. And I hope not settle, but perhaps even settle.
But see, that's the temptation. They're not going to ask $8 million from Adam Carolla. They're going to say, well, it's going to cost you $300,000 to fight
this. Ask the largest amount they can get away with.
Yeah, that's going to cost you less than the legal action. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why I think we need to all band together. We may need to make it. Together we have a chance. Singly, we don't.
It's, I don't know, it's crap like this that makes me want to go out and punch people. It really is. It is.
Will you be an expert witness on our behalf?
I don't know. I've been angry of late, especially this past week, just because I hate crowds. But, man, it makes my blood boil.
Well, I know we can count on our audience. It makes my blood boil, too. And also, it is exactly what's been wrong. We've talked about this patent nonsense for a long time. I can't wait for Roger to get changry.
People need to go and do getting changry.
Changry behind bars. That's what I need.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'll keep you up to date on that story, believe me. And we do have a request out to both Adam and How Things Work. And by the way, we talked about Aaron Swartz, who helped write the code for Reddit. Sometimes is, I think, incorrectly credited as being a Reddit co-founder. Reddit founder Alex Ohanian joins us Wednesday on Triangulation. We'll talk about Aaron because I'm sure he'll have much to say. That'll be Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. on Twit. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week. Another Twit.
Amazing.
It's in the can.